Manchester City, a stronghold of governmental and military terror for the terrorist organisation.
Fighting for peace, Netanyahu says he wants talks to end the war to begin immediately as Israeli troops encircle Gaza City. And now come the protests. After Farage and others called for more demonstrations outside asylum hotels, 30 are planned this weekend.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the Israeli Prime Minister says he's ordered negotiations to end the war in Gaza on terms acceptable to Israel. But Benjamin Netanyahu has promised to continue with plans to decisively defeat Hamas in an assault on Gaza City. Hamas signed up earlier this week to a temporary ceasefire proposal put forward by Egypt and Qatar. Mike Huckabee is the US ambassador to Israel.
Israel has to live with whatever decision they make, but President Trump is fully supportive of making sure that Hamas knows that from the U.S. perspective, they have to disarm, they have to give up and let all the hostages go.
A wave of potential protests and counter-protests are expected at asylum hotels. It follows the High Court's decision to grant a temporary injunction to remove migrants from a hotel in Epping. Other local councils are looking at bringing similar legal action. The government has announced a crackdown on high levels of salt and sugar in baby food. Manufacturers have been given 18 months to change their recipes and meet new labelling standards on health claims. Ministers say they will consider alternative measures if the guidelines aren't followed. An appeals court in New York has thrown out a $500 million civil fraud penalty against Donald Trump. He was found last year to have exaggerated the value of his company's properties in declarations to lenders and insurance companies. Judges upheld the ruling but decided the fine was excessive. England are preparing for the opening match of the Women's Rugby World Cup as home favourites. They are on a 27-game winning run going into this evening's tie with the USA at the Stadium of Light in Sunderland. Lock Abby Ward says they will thrive under the pressure.
I don't know a time when the Red Roses haven't been under pressure or perceived pressure. Like, we've always had that, oh, you're ranked number one, you've had this many wins in a row, you've won however many Grand Slams. Like, the day that the Red Roses don't have that pressure, that'll feel weird.
16 nations will play at venues across England, including in Manchester, York, London and Exeter in the coming weeks. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 93.09 after closing up 21 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, another dry day with sunny spells for many, cooler and cloudier in central areas. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
It's me, again, to remind you that tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
Which means it's time to play the song. Again. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 3 minutes past seven the time on Friday the 22nd of August. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast at LBC. Hope we find you very well. Coming up,
it's not wrapped up in a coherent enough story about the change that we're bringing.
A senior cabinet minister criticises his boss, the Prime Minister, saying Labour haven't convinced the public the change they want to bring is actually going to make things better. Wes Streeting going a bit off script. Is he right? What can they do about it? Also,
I don't think it's the government's business. I think it's the union problem. Get back to work.
Mind the gap. Tube services could be suspended for a week as part of an RMT union walkout. And
sometimes they form emotional bonds with characters on TV. The same happens with chatbots, right? People get attached.
AI bots now seem capable of learning discrete ways of communicating between themselves as mere humans worry about them causing psychosis because users believe that AI is conscious. Is it driving us mad?
Call 0345 6060 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. This hour,
it's those vile, awful, horrid, far-right protesters. How dare they be upset?
And now here come the mass protests. As called for by politicians like Nigel Farage, some 30 demonstrations are due to be held outside migrant hotels this weekend, we're being told this morning. They say it is to help bolster legal arguments to get those hotels shut. The reality, though, is that anger at the presence of the hotels had almost zero effect on that injunction to shut down the Bell Hotel in Epping. That was done so on planning laws. Meanwhile, figures revealed yesterday show an 8% rise in the number of asylum seekers in hotels, from 29,500 to 32,000 during Labour's first year in power. Worth reminding you that they have promised to close all hotels for that purpose by the end of the Parliament. I think we all get, we must get, don't we? I get why people are so infuriated by this farce of a situation. But what or who are you most angry at? The reality is, it seems to me, that people from far-flung hellholes are going to want to come here either for asylum or to work. If you were in the position of knowing that your life was going to absolute rack and ruin and that the streets were apparently paved with gold over there, you might try and do the same thing. So yes, there is anger at those who come here and cause a degree of chaos. But isn't your main well of ire reserved for the incompetence who presided over a failed border system? The people in hotels are taking full advantage of a completely deranged system that they are working to their advantage. Aren't you better off protesting in Whitehall than you are at a hotel? Isn't that who your anger should be addressed towards? Or will you find yourself this weekend heading down to a hotel, whether it's in Oldham or Exeter or Oxford or Perth or Aberdeen or maybe even Kent, to protest at these hotels? Let's speak to Katie Lamb, Conservative MP for Weald of Kent and Shadow Home Office Minister. Thank you for coming on the programme this morning. I wonder what you make of the call for these protests and then the response that they're going to happen. Do you welcome them? Morning.
Good morning. Well, I welcome local people making their voices heard, which is what I think that we're seeing.
Do you think it's appropriate that they are heard outside these hotels?
I think it's appropriate that they're heard where people live. That's what people are worried about. That's what people's concerns focus around. And when you see particularly parents, particularly mums, genuinely concerned about walking home at the end of the day, about their children walking home at the end of the day, I think it is appropriate that that's where they should protest.
What more can be done to close down those these hotels more quickly, in your view?
The only thing ultimately that will close not just hotels, but also houses of multiple occupation, HMOs and other housing which is being used for asylum seekers, is to stop people coming here illegally and coming across the channel. So there is no solution that will actually work that doesn't involve detaining and deporting people on arrival.
How is that going to be possible with the current set of legislation?
Under the current set of legislation, it's not. The law would have to change. The government would have to change the law. They've shown no appetite for doing that. But there is no solution to this problem that doesn't involve detaining people when they arrive and sending them either home or somewhere else safe as swiftly as possible.
Can you understand, surely we can understand, why somebody in a hellhole country somewhere would want to try and use the holes in the system to their advantage to come to the UK?
Coming to Britain the way that these people are is a completely rational thing to do. It's still illegal, but it's totally rational on the part of these individuals. The fault lies with the system for incentivising them to do it.
A system that has increased in incentivising these people to do it over the last 10 years or so?
It has always been very advantageous to come to Britain, and by always I mean sort of in the past few mm-hmm. decades, but certainly the way that some case law has moved and the way that some of our international obligations are applied has made it even more attractive, because the chances of being removed get slimmer and slimmer.
Yes. So if there are protests in your constituency this weekend outside these hotels, you would sort of welcome that, or say that that was a reasonable thing to do?
I think any peaceful protest that doesn't obstruct people going about living their daily lives is absolutely a reasonable thing to do. It's a core part of free speech in a democracy.
Can I ask you, too, about one of your colleagues, Robert Jenrick, the Shadow Justice Minister, raising the union flag on lampposts around his constituency in defiance of what he calls Britain-hating councils? Do you think the councils that take those flags down hate Britain?
I think the councils that take those flags down have their priorities wrong. I think that they're too worried about bureaucracy and enforcing small rules which they can enforce, and much less worried than they should be about much bigger problems which are harder to solve. But it's easier for them to focus on these smaller things. I think it should absolutely, I think it should be totally fine and celebrated if people want to hang the national flag.
Why do you think more people are doing it? This sort of race to try and hang union flags from lampposts. Why do you think that's happening more and more?
I think that there has been for a long time a growing sense in this country, particularly amongst the political and maybe in some areas of the media elites and academic elites, that there's something wrong with Britain, that there are things that we have to be ashamed of and that we have to spend a lot of time apologising. I don't believe that, and I don't think that the public believes that. And I think a pride in our flag and a desire to hang it is a totally reasonable reaction to that.
But so this is a backlash to having been told for years that that Britain's a bad place?
Yes, I think so.
Good to talk to you. Thank you for coming on. Katie Lamb is Conservative MP for Weald of Kent and Shadow Home Office Minister. 7:10, Wayman Bennett is a co-convener of Stand Up to Racism, which is organising a number of counter-protests this weekend. You've heard there from a Shadow Home Office Minister, Mr Bennett, that these protests outside those hotels are a legitimate form of expression of anger. What say you, sir? Morning. I don't know if we got the line to Mr Bennett. Let's see if we can get Wayman Bennett on the line and listen to his side of the argument, particularly given these 30 or so protests are going to have those counter-protests attached to them. The figures that have, I think, possibly inspired a little more anger in this, in the system itself, rather than necessarily the people that came out yesterday, have shown a refugee status of hitting a record high in the year to June. That's nearly doubling the level seen in 2021. There was an 8% rise in the number of asylum seekers in hotels from around just under 30,000 to just over 32,000 in Labour's first year in power. 10 Labour-controlled councils have also confirmed that they were reviewing the implications of that High Court judgment applied in Epping, with some now considering their own legal options to go to the High Court to get injunctions placed on those hotels. Now, I suggest again that the ire is going to be, should be, directed at the game and not the players, to put it like that. The people coming over are taking advantage of a broken system. A system that is broken partly because of the numbers coming, but also because of a apparent lack of political desire to get to grips with it or to change the things that might need to be changed, as Katie Lamb suggested in legal terms, to remove people who perhaps shouldn't be here. That's what you need to be angry with, isn't it? And that's why I worry slightly about the call to arms to go to these hotels to protest against the people in them. Yes, you can be cross with them. Yes, they're trying to find loopholes in the system that allow them to stay and what have you. Of course they are. But it's the system that's allowing it. Wayman Bennett is hopefully joining us on a better line. Thanks for being there, Mr. Bennett. Your reaction to the call to protest at these hotels from certain politicians?
I think people are angry at the, you know, the last government was a shambles over housing, over a whole series of things, and people have been misdirected to blame migrants for this problem. And I don't think that's true. I think the majority of problems in housing and the lack of access to that has not been caused by migrants, which only form 20,000 of the people that are coming here. And according to government figures, show a 12% drop in the amount of spending on hotels. I've been at those demonstrations. They're not peaceful. They're violent. And they're organised by the far right.
Some of them are violent. Not all of them.
On those demonstrations. And I think that, you know, to be honest with you, there was no law and order on the demonstration, because the right of Britain for free speech is one people go on one side and other people go on the other side and say that asylum policy should be organised and decent. And that's not what happens on these demonstrations.
What's your view of the people that go on them?
Pardon?
What's your view of the people that turn up to these demonstrations?
I think not everybody on the demonstration is a racist, but if you're in a Homeland Party or if you're an ex-BNP member organising your C18... that I saw at Epping, you're not a peaceful person. You're somebody who's there to whip up racism against particularly people that are asylum seekers. And to be honest with you, talking to black and Asian people walking up and down the street, being questioned from where they're from and how long they've been here and what they're doing, I don't think that's got anything to do with British society. I think there's been an outbreak of an almost lynch mob, and there've been, in some ways, I was at the court ruling, and the court ruling was, because there's a danger of violence taking place, then the proper planning hadn't been applied. So all you need to do, if you want your view to be taken place, is to use semi-terrorist methods outside the hotel.
Semi-terrorist?
Terrorist methods, threatening people, using violence as a means of achieving your political objectives.
Well, the ruling for Epping did not rely on that to form the judgment. The judgment was formed on a sort of very narrow piece of planning law. It wasn't directly because there were people protesting outside.
Yes, but I was at the court, and a major part of what Epping Forest put forward was that there were violent protests.
That's what they put forward, but the law that saw the injunction applied was around planning. It wasn't around these hotels have attracted protests necessarily.
I honestly do not believe if there hadn't been violent protests, which we know, according to the Times and even to the Telegraph, have been organised by the actual organisers of these people, are far-right people that are fascists, right? That has been accepted. These people are not for the public good. And actually,
and there's no sort of far-left Antifa movement that seeks to combat that violence with violence,
well,
too, no?
No, to be honest with you, I understand the language of Donald Trump seeping into the British media, but I think they've got more questions to answer about CSD because of Mr. Epstein and his close relationship with people that abuse children than Antifa and anything else. I think that's a false
argument. Well, if we're arguing that violence outside these hotels is a bad thing, and I think we both are, then that applies to both sides, I think. Thank you for your time. Wayman Bennett is a co-convener of Stand Up to Racism, organising a number of counter-protests this weekend. Hawley, Cannock, Nottingham, Bristol, Newcastle, Tamworth, Wakefield, Liverpool, Oldham, Exeter. I mean, it's all over the country where these protests are taking place, called for by politicians, it's fair to say, in order to try and get those hotels shut. Now, do you think that is a responsible thing for those politicians to call for? You have a legal right to protest. You can go and voice your opinion about largely anything in this country, hopefully wherever you like. Outside an asylum hotel, sure. But are you angry at the player or are you angry at the game? I would suggest you be angry at the game. 03456060973 is the number. Very keen to hear from you if you're planning to go on one of those protests this weekend. Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. Coming up,
this pathetic self-loathing needs to end. We should be proud of our country.
And now here's the Shadow Justice Secretary in a social media video post putting up a flag on one of the lampposts in his constituency, telling people to do so in defiance of what he calls Britain-hating councils. If they take a flag down from a lamppost, do they hate Britain? Get your thoughts on that in just a few moments. 7:17, news headlines on LBC. Thomas Watts.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says negotiators will resume talks on ending the war in Gaza on terms acceptable to Israel. Police are preparing for potential protests and counter-protests near hotels used as asylum accommodation. And makers of baby food have been given 18 months to cut sugar and salt in their products. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many, but cooler and cloudier in central areas. A high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. There are delays on the M25 clockwise due to a broken down van from Junction 7 for the M23 to Junction 8 for Reigate. The A10 Great Cambridge Road in Tottenham is partially blocked southbound at the roundway. That's due to an accident. The A406 North Circular in Park Royal is partially blocked northbound due to emergency repairs at Hanger Lane. The recuse in New Cross with Hatch and Park Road closed eastbound from the A2 New Cross Road to Camplin Street. That's because of a building fire earlier. And on the tubes, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line eastbound between Acton Town and Cockfosters due to signal problems. And there are severe delays on the Jubilee line. That's due to a power failure at Neasden.
This is LBC.
Now it's even easier to sell for free on eBay. I was thinking, maybe I should sell that juicer we've used a grand total of once. Or the shirt I've been saying I'll wear for the last 2 years, but never have. Or that tiger cushion the dog barks at every time he's in the lounge. Oh, is that it again? No, Bertie!
With new AI listing features and simple delivery, it's now even easier to sell for free on eBay. Download the app now. eBay. Things people love. T's and C's apply. Excludes vehicles.
This is LBC.
Zero, nada, zilch. When Vauxhall say 0%, they mean 0%.
0% APR is available now across the Vauxhall car range, including the all-new Frontera Electric. With a minimum 20% deposit and up to 4 years on offer, what's not to like? And now, for a limited time, get an extra £500 towards your new Vauxhall. Search Vauxhall to find out more. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, £500 contribution on new car orders between 23rd of August to 8th of September 2025. 18 plus, subject to status and availability, T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with T.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Morning to you, 20 past 7 the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast this Friday morning. We'll talk about the potential of a week-long strike on the London Underground to coincide possibly with strikes along various parts of the NHS as well. So it could be the papers calling it an autumn of discontent this year. We'll get into the details of that a bit later on. We'll talk about Robert Jenrick, who's launching a sort of one-man campaign on social media to go and attach flags to lampposts. Now, I'm all for a patriotic spirit. I like it. I'm here for it. Really, I am. My patriotism would not involve me attaching a flag to a lamppost, if I'm honest. I prefer a sort of understated patriotism. A single tear falls at the sight of a disused pub or a countryside view. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. It's not the gregarious over the top attaching of flags to lampposts, but Robert Jenrick describes those councils who are taking them down as Britain hating. Are they? We'll look at that in more detail in just a few moments' time too. Let's come back to these protests at asylum hotels. 30 of them, at least 30 of them, we're told, happening this weekend after politicians, Nigel Farage and others, called for those protests to take place to get those hotels shut down. Sonny is in Ilford. Sonny, is that a responsible thing to have asked people to do? Hi.
No. you asked at the beginning if the protest should be towards Parliament rather than towards the hotels, and I would say yes. It's so futile, this whole thing. It drives me mad at the moment. I'm a lawyer. I'm not practicing at the moment, but I have mostly worked in immigration law. Not much asylum work, but I did have clients and individuals who had claimed asylum in the past. The whole system is an absolute mess. I mean, yeah. The conversation is send them back to France. France handles many more applications than we do. Mm-hmm. Funnily enough, we actually grant more asylum claims than France on the initial claim. I'm not sure what that is, but it is the case.
We grant a greater proportion of them on first.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, on the initial claim. We grant more than them.
40-odd percent, I think, is the latest number. 40% yeah. of those claims are yeah. legitimate asylum yeah. claims on first hearing.
Yeah, and then obviously you hear that these illegal immigrants, they... If they claim asylum, they're not illegal, at least temporarily.
Well, there's a back and forth about this, Sonny. I'd very much like a lawyer's opinion here, calling for a lawyer. Mm-hmm. I had Chris Philp on yesterday, the Shadow Home Secretary, saying that they are illegal under a particular piece of legislation coming into the country in the fashion that they have done, which, if that were the case, the Tories could and therefore should have done a lot more to... prosecute people who had arrived in the country illegally, but they didn't.
I agree. I mean, prosecuting is almost pointless because of their status at the time and asylum claims still has to be processed. I think that comes to another issue, which is the government we've had in the last 15, 20 years. Obviously, Brexit has meant that we're not in the Dublin yeah. Agreement anymore, yeah. so we don't have the right to send them back. So it's one thing saying, send them back to France, send the boats back. But whatever protocols were in place before, we don't have any agreement on that on the same basis. And the other thing is something actually Theresa May brought in, I think wrongly, which was the Modern Slavery Act. We already had laws that protected people who would be considered to be, I mean, it became more abrupt, the fact that, you know, the slavery still exists. You know, I think it brought consciousness about that.
But it creates victims where perhaps they didn't need that victim status attached to them, is one of the, seen as one of the consequences of that bit of legislation. Sonny, appreciate the call. Thank you. Christine's in Ilford. Hi, Christine.
Good morning to you. Yes, I wrote a letter to Priti Patel. Do you remember her?
I do
when
remember.
When this first started,
yes.
And said to her, if you're going to give everything free, they're after a free ticket, you're going to get thousands, and it has happened. I've got a sister in Australia. Now, this is a huge country, and they don't get illegal immigrants at all.
They had an extremely robust process. Yeah.
Now, why don't we follow that system? The government is letting us down, and I agree with people putting a flag up because it's our only way of fighting back. I mean, somebody came up with illegal or racist. Now, who comes up with these words? We're not racist. We just want our country back.
Country back from whom?
Well, from these people who are coming over the...
But you can understand, Christine, why if you lived in a hellhole, you might try your luck by coming to a country where the streets are apparently paved with gold and it's very easy to work in the black economy. You would try and do that, wouldn't you?
No, we are living in a hellhole now because all our taxes have gone up. We can't get in a hospital. You can't get to a doctor.
There are plenty of problems with this country. I would be the first to say. Generational contracts have been broken. The idea that you pass on to your children a better opportunity for them to get on and up in life, it seems to have been breaking down for the last few years. So, Christine, I would agree with you that we're in a bit of bother. But by no means is this country a hellhole. Come on. We're better than that. Christine, thank you very much indeed. 7:26 the time. Next.
Isn't that a beautiful sight? British flags. But don't tell Labour-run Birmingham City Council, or they'll probably come and take them down.
That's the Shadow Justice Secretary in his social media walkie-talkie videos, posting himself putting up a flag on a lamppost in Birmingham. Sebastian Salick is a Labour councillor in Waltham Forest and a former political journalist with Bloomberg. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. Robert Jenrick describes those councils taking down these UK flags, British flags, as Britain-hating. What say you? Morning.
Morning, Tom. Well, brace yourself. I'm about to say something nice about the Tories. I think back to Churchill. I think back to Thatcher. And say what you want about their policies. And I know I certainly have a few reservations, but they were statesmen. And you look at the current crop and it's very hard to say the same. I thought that when we voted to reject the Tories at the ballot box last year, that we were opting out of watching the ongoing conservative psychodrama. But here we are, strapped to our chairs, eyes pasted open, and we're forced to endure cats scrapping in an alleyway over who's going to be the next Tory leader. And it's some kind of I'm a celebrity style contest where there's no way they won't humiliate themselves in order to win the crown. It's quite painful to endure, I'm afraid. And I think there are many around me who feel the same. Yes.
Do you think tying a flag to a lamppost is humiliating?
I think trying to ape anything that Nigel Farage and others on the far right do is humiliating. The way to win in politics is to cut through, to do something different, to bring something fresh. And all I see in Jenrick really is a pale imitation of those who come before him. And look, he might win the Tory leadership contest. He probably will. He's making a lot of noise. But I think that would be a real mistake, because how do you regain a modicum of relevance, as the Tories desperately, I'm afraid, need to at the moment? It's not by aping what somebody else on the ballot box is already doing.
They call themselves a patriotism campaign. It's called Operation Raise the Colours. Would you describe that as far right?
Not universally. I think there will be many people who do this and do it in good faith. But what really concerns me is that there are some genuine far-right groups who are involved. So you look at Britain First, who have donated money to buy flags. You've got Tommy Robinson, who's very happy to be retweeting this constantly. Mm-hmm. And I would just be very hesitant about getting involved with a campaign where those figures are also involved. That said, I love a bit of patriotism. I love walking down the Mall outside Buckingham Palace, seeing the Union Jacks flying, the same on Regent Street. I know we have quite a shy flavour of patriotism mm-hmm. in this country. You were talking about it earlier, and I feel the same. Mine comes from listening to Vaughan Williams and, spotting a Norman church outside along the train line. And that's how I feel. But that doesn't mean that people who want to fly flags shouldn't be allowed to do that in a legal place, in their gardens, outside their cars, rather than on a lamppost, which, and I'm so sorry, this is incredibly boring, is more often than not illegal.
Sebastian Salick, thank you very much indeed. Former political journalist with Bloomberg, now a Labour councillor in Waltham Forest. It's an I do think this movement is quite interesting, this Operation Raise the Colours thing, which might have tinges of or being funded by organisations that you might not necessarily want to have much to do with. But this idea of re-establishing a national identity and being quite robust in re-establishing that national identity has been a little while coming, I think. If we want to have a country where, as the Prime Minister described it and then slightly resiled from his own words, we don't become islands of strangers because the integration hasn't worked, then I do think we need to take a bit more of a robust approach about what unites us rather than the obvious things that separate us. So re-establishing a national identity, whether it's round a flag or a Norman church from a train line or whatever it might be, that sense of collective belonging, I think is a very, very good thing and probably much needed. Whether it's done by attaching a flag to a lamppost, I'm not so sure. 0345 6060 973 is the number. Come to more of your calls in a few moments. Coming up...
And this climate is quite understandable, I suppose.
It impacts everybody who's just trying to make a living and trying to get to work or trying to drop their kids off.
Mind the gap. Tube could come to a standstill in a week-long strike as RMT workers mull a walkout. This is junior doctors and others in the NHS also consider further strike action in what's being described as an autumn of discontent. We'll get into that story in a few moments. Thomas Warbrick on LBC 7:30. News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Israel's Prime Minister says he's ordered negotiations to end the war in Gaza on terms acceptable to Israel. But Benjamin Netanyahu has promised to continue with plans to decisively defeat Hamas in an assault on Gaza City. A number of protests and counter-protests are planned near hotels used as asylum accommodation. It follows the High Court's decision to grant a temporary injunction to remove migrants from a hotel in Epping. Baby food makers have been given 18 months to cut sugar and salt in their products. The new guidelines are intended to address growing concerns that children's development is being harmed by poor diets. LBC weather, another dry day with sunny spells for many, cooler and cloudier in central areas, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus?
I can't believe it!
Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only, T's and C's apply.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's supply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
It's me, again, to remind you that tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
Which means it's time to play the song. Again. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
7:33 the time. Dave, I'll get to your call in just a few moments. Here's Joseph in North London. Tom, one posh boy talking to another about England. You still live in England with your Norman churches. A growing cohort of your fellow Brits now live in a foreign country. It will not end well. The anger and frustration is growing daily. I think you're right. I think anger and frustration is growing daily. I just think we need to be very clear about what it is that we are angry and frustrated at. Yes, you can be angry and frustrated at the people coming over here taking advantage of a creaking, if not completely destroyed, asylum system. You can be angry with those people. Some of them are chancing their arm. But it's the system that they're gaming. And that's the thing that has gone to hell in a handcart, and that is the responsibility of politicians. 03456060973 is the number. Let's speak to Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. Big news in the steel industry, Christian, in this country. One of the, I think it's the third largest steel maker that's gone into liquidation.
Yeah, the government's getting into the steel industry in a very big way. They now run effectively over half of Britain's steel industry after they last night took control of Sanjeev Gupta's Rotherham plant, Speciality Steel. Sanjeev Gupta, of course, once upon a time the saviour of British steel, yeah, buying them up left, right and centre. Not gone terribly well for him, and it's not going terribly well for the wider sector. So the official receiver, government appointment yesterday, took control of the operations of this Rotherham plant. Labour want to save around 1,000 jobs in and associated with the plant. They say that they're going to try and find a buyer for it. Well, I don't know how much interest there is. Don't forget, the government took over British Steel from its Chinese owner in April, and they are on the hook for just under £1 billion in the running costs of that. They still haven't found a buyer. In fact, they're still in quite tense negotiations trying to extract it fully from its Chinese owners, who are demanding a small fortune for the government to take it off their hands. So that is the government getting into this industry in a big way, an industry that suffered huge uncertainty throughout the tariff tensions, despite coming out of that relatively unscathed. But of course, they have enormous energy costs, yep, that they have to contend with. So there is a school of thought that the government, successive governments, it should be said, are driving these industries to the edge of collapse and then taking them over. It's not an entirely sustainable situation.
You put it in diplomatic terms, Christian. So there is an industry where jobs are suffering and people are very concerned about them. Meantime, fewer jobs postings were made in July in signs that there is a summer slowdown in the UK. And I see particularly bad, really acute in Northern Ireland, which experienced the worst decline in new job postings, with a decline of around 40% year on year.
Yeah, the picture's not terribly rosy, and there are, as you just identified, pockets where it's really quite concerning.
Yeah.
What we know to have happened this summer is that there's simply been far, far fewer of the sort of temporary hospitality-related jobs in particular that normally fuel a bit of a summer boom. That entire hospitality sector is just not up for that. Their cost base cannot bear the burdens of taking on the sort of additional numbers of staff that they would normally do so in the summer. So job postings overall made in July were down just under 10%. Compared to June, over the year down about 11%. We know that the labour market is struggling. It's not a uniform picture. There are some pockets where it's quite robust. Pay growth is quite robust.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some serious concern within parts of the economy. It's something the Bank of England keeps a very close eye on as it considers its next interest rate reduction, possible reduction, if that's what they're going to do later this year. So we know that businesses across the country have suffered an enormous increase in their cost base. Some of them have been able to bear that, and some of them have not.
And well, the supermarkets are saying, please don't hit us any further. They can't take any more of it, they say.
They are. Now, I was speaking to the chief executive of one of the biggest supermarkets in this country, who said that they feel that the government basically think that they can keep on taxing them, because what they're going to do, they can't go anywhere, they're not going to leave the country, they're, you know, pretty rooted here. And so quite an extraordinary coordinated effort from the biggest supermarkets, yeah, yesterday wrote to the government, wrote to the Chancellor and said, look, if you come back for any further tax increases on business and on our sector, and they're talking about business rates in particular, but also labour costs, you're going to undermine growth, you're going to undermine living standards, and it's, you know, we simply can't take any more. And people think you're kidding, you know, the bosses of these supermarkets are paid millions, they turn over billions, but the margins in that, yeah, sector, yeah, are absolutely tiny. So it's really very finely balanced.
Christian, appreciate it. Thank you. Christian May is the editor-in-chief at City AM. You hear that call from all kinds of places now, whether it's the supermarkets, whether it's the hospitality sector. Frankly, just shouting at your radio in the morning, please, Chancellor, stop taxing me to the hilt. Whether it's on, you know, your national insurance contributions, or whether they're going to come for your pensions, or put, as they are going to do from April 2027, put your private pension pot, whatever's unspent, roll that into inheritance tax if you're over certain thresholds. You just want to hand some money over to your children. But according to some, you have no right to inherit. Come on. Leon's in Orpington. You want to talk about these asylum hotels, Leon? Hi.
Hello, sir. How are you doing, Thomas? Good morning.
Sir. Your thoughts.
How you doing? Like, all I want to say is, why don't these do-gooders in this country, actually, the people who who agree with the asylum people being here, actually put them up in their own houses. You know, that would save the government. No, but, you know, it's adoption. We was talking about adoption earlier on today on your programme.
Was I?
You adopt one of them asylum seekers. And if you're one of them people that wants them in your house, then you do that.
Well, there are people that have done that. I personally wouldn't be doing that, Leon. Would you?
No, obviously you wouldn't. No, I wouldn't either. But I don't agree with them. I'm actually going to the protest tomorrow in Uppington. Or tonight, whenever it's going to be. But I won't be causing no trouble. But I need a reason to say that the government has got to sort this out immediately because our hospitals are ruined, our housing is ruined, and we're bringing more and more people into this country, which we don't need. I thought this Brexit was about getting Britain back to being Britain again.
Did you vote Brexit, Leon?
No, I didn't, actually. I want to be part of Europe. So I like Spain. I like to be able to travel, and I like the freedom. I'm an honest citizen who's got a passport. I've got all my paperwork.
But the greater number of people coming is through legal migration, not through asylum.
No, it's not. The ones on boats haven't got no paperwork.
That's what I'm saying, sir. The vast, vast majority of people coming into this country are coming here legally through legal routes, visas, jobs, students, dependents, what have you.
That's perfectly fine by me. It's the ones who come illegally. And you keep coming up with this racism and illegal and... What, I'm not a racist, yeah? My dad come here from Ireland in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. I'm actually an Irish, Italian, Albanian and Romanian immigrant, really. Wow. Yeah? I've got a mixture of that amount of cultures in my body.
Pan-European?
Well, of course, yeah. That's what I am, trans-European. But my dad settled here and we've earned a lot of money. I've been taxed, because my dad passed away 2 or 3 years ago, I've been taxed to the hill to pay for other people's to stay in a hotel and have 3 meals a day.
Yeah,
I don't even get 3 meals a day.
Now, this, Leon, I think is a real problem. That not only are people feeling that they are being taxed to the hilt, particularly workers, the way in which the government is spending that money is a complete waste. So you're not getting much more for taking a lot more out of your pay packet, and that I think is a real, real problem. We'll come to the comments that Wes Streeting has made about the direction of travel of the government that he serves in a few moments' time, Leon. Thank you very much indeed. Talking of direction of travel.
I don't think it's the government's business. I think it's the union problem. Get back to work.
Get back to work is the call to RMT workers who may go on strike and grind the tube to a halt for a full week next month as they ballot over that strike action. Let's speak to Jared Wood, who's the RMT London Transport Regional Organiser. Thank you for coming on the programme, Mr. Wood. What is the reason for this potential walkout, sir?
Well, first of all, I'll just make the point very quickly that our members are at work all around the year, 24/7, dead early starts, 4 a.m, finishing at 1 a.m, working weekends, bank holidays, the lot. And we generate enormous amounts of money for the London economy by doing so. We're told that it's worth about £30 million a day. So, you know, we think that we make a massive contribution to London, but our members are really furious that long-standing issues that we've been raising, particularly on the question of fatigue and extreme shift working, has been ignored. And London Underground are telling us that there's no money to address those problems. And yet, the most senior directors have had a pay rise this year of 20% to over £600,000. And we know that London
20%.
Underground... Yeah, and London Underground has saved £100 million a year on the employer's pension contribution this year. But we're being told there's no money to resolve the really serious problems that our members face.
Well, there's not no money. I read here that you've rejected a 3.4% pay rise offer. But how much more do you want? What's the ask?
The ask is for a better offer. The claim covers a whole number of issues, including outstanding issues that haven't been resolved from previous pay rounds to do with ensuring that everyone gets the pay rise to deal with staff travel and a number of other issues. Those things are all outstanding.
You want free travel on the Underground?
Our claim on working hours is outstanding.
Yes.
And we've not accepted any part of the offer. So we're looking for a better offer and we'll consider anything.
One of the things I read that you want to do is to shorten the working week from 35 hours to 34 and a half hours. Why?
Yeah, because that would allow us to ensure that shift work can be improved. At the moment, people do round-the-clock shifts. You can do seven-night turns. You get a couple of days off. You're then back to early turns, possibly, or late turns or whatever. And the only way that you can really address that is to shorten the working week or give people more quality time away from the job. And that's how you deal with those things.
So a 34-and-a-half-hour week. So just over 4 days... Work.
What we've said to London Underground, we have a national.
How can you
policy
provide a 24-hour operation if people are only working four and a bit days?
Yeah, there's a whole number of train operators in this country and around the world that operate on a 34-hour week or less. Actually, you know, we believe that in the modern world, there's no reason. We talk about AI and people losing jobs, etc. Actually, you know, why on earth aren't we talking about shortening the working day for people?
Well, you've got to be careful what you wish for.
It's 2025.
Because driverless trains have often been talked about on the London Underground with the technology that's changing. So just get this straight. More money... A pay rise above 3.4% and fewer working hours. That's a great deal if you can get it.
Well, I think it would be a reasonable deal if we can get it. As I said, every time one of our members goes to work, they generate thousands of pounds in one shift, one member of staff. And we don't think it's unreasonable to expect working conditions that don't result in long-term detriment to your health, a reduction in your life expectancy. This is what our members face because of the shift work that we do.
All right, Mr. Wood, thank you. Jared Wood is the RMT London Transport Regional Organiser. Potential for strikes coming in the next month or so across the whole underground. Just the RMT, it's not necessarily just the drivers, but that would see a suspension of potentially the entire network for a week. Imagine the chaos that would cause. Is it warranted? 03456060973. Talking of AI...
We as professionals and doctors may start having to ask people when we see them in clinic how much AI they're using, how it's affecting their lives.
Incredible story on the front page of a number of newspapers this morning. Growing numbers of people are suffering from AI psychosis, where they believe that chatbots have become sentient or have imbued them with superhuman powers. This is according to the head of artificial intelligence at Microsoft. Is it driving us mad? Get into the details. 7:46, news headlines now. Thomas Watts.
The Israeli Prime Minister says he's ordered talks to end the war in Gaza on terms acceptable to Israel. A wave of protests and counter-protests are expected at asylum hotels in the coming days. The government's announced a crackdown on high levels of salt and sugar in baby food. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. In Hackney, the A106 Castleland Road is blocked eastbound due to an accident from Terrace Road to Kenton Road. The A10 Great Cambridge Road in Tottenham is partially blocked southbound at the roundway. That's due to an accident. There are delays in Park Royal with the A406 North Circular partially blocked northbound due to emergency repairs at Hanger Lane. In Brixton, one lane is blocked on the A23 Brixton Hill because of a broken down car near the church. There are queues in New Cross with Hatcham Park Road closed eastbound from the A2 New Cross Road to Camplin Street. That's because of a building fire earlier. And on the tubes, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line eastbound between Acton Town and Cockfosters.
LBC.
Got the tiles?
Got the snacks?
K-W-E-E-N. Queen. 18 points.
That's so not how you spell it, but I'll let you off. My turn.
Snap into the sharing bar that goes with any evening. Kit Kat sharing bars. Crispy Kit Kat wafers with three irresistible fillings in hazelnut, salty caramel or double chocolate, covered in thick marbled swirls. Perfect for sharing. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
This is LBC.
Zero, nada, zilch. When Vauxhall say 0%, they mean 0%. 0% APR is available now across the Vauxhall car range, including the all-new Frontera Electric. With a minimum 20% deposit and up to 4 years on offer, what's not to like? And now, for a limited time, get an extra £500 towards your new Vauxhall. Search Vauxhall to find out more. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, £500 contribution on new car orders between 23rd of August to 8th of September 2025. 18 plus, subject to status and availability, T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well? You're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals, verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus duty only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
7:49 the time. The situation in the Middle East is changing almost hour by hour this morning. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is calling on an end to the war. He wants to see a peace negotiated, but on terms that Israel can agree to, as Israeli troops surround Gaza City and one UN agency declares a famine in that particular city. We'll get into the details of that after the news at 8 o'clock. Marat's in Stratford. Now, Marat, as I understand it, you have claimed asylum having arrived from Kazakhstan. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, correct. Hello.
Hello. When did you arrive in the UK and how did you arrive in the UK?
I come like 1.5 years ago with airplane.
And you arrived on a visa or you illegally visa, hopped onto a plane?
Visa.
On a tourist visa?
Yeah.
And then you claimed asylum?
Yeah.
Where are you housed?
I lived in the hotel. Or you mean now?
Whilst your claim was being processed, you lived in a hotel?
Yeah, and living in the hotel after I moved for camp in Folkestone, they closed. And after I lived in the house, like in the room. Mm-hmm. So I wait decision like 1 year. And after, so they give me decision, all right? And after I find a job, now I'm working and paying tax, everything. So, and I very often listen the question why, British people should to pay tax for this, for hotels, for food, and another thing for support, refugee. Firstly, I want to say about my country, I don't know how situation is in other countries, but Kazakhstan resources and capital have been flowing into the United Kingdom for many years. Oil, gas, minerals, all of this extracted.
Yes. And but Marat, you were granted asylum on what basis, sir?
How?
Yes, for what reason were you given asylum in the UK?
Because a government, political, government follow me, police officer tried to rape me in my house, my brother, official political prisoner from, right. Europarlament, right. I have a document about this, and also they tortured my brother.
Right. So you were given a decision to grant you asylum in a year and a half, during which you stayed in a hotel and then a house paid for by the taxpayer. Yeah. So what would you say, Marat, to people listening who say cheating the system, costing a fortune, shouldn't be here at all?
Say it again. What do you mean? Why they should help for us?
Exactly. Why they should pay for that?
Because we need the help, because we deserve to help also.
But
because,
why UK? Why the UK specifically? Why not Germany or France or Italy or another European safe country?
Because people ask help from this country. We didn't ask from another country. If someone asks your help, you say, why you didn't ask my help? Why you didn't ask someone else? Because he asked you.
But the UK didn't ask for you to claim asylum here.
Hmm?
The UK did not ask for you to claim asylum in the UK.
I don't understand, sorry.
Why could you not have claimed asylum in a different, safe European country rather than the UK? Why specifically
because,
did you ask for here?
Like, about my... I don't know how, again, another people, but because UK, a safe country, far from my country, very far, because I feel this country safety than another country.
All right. Mara, appreciate the call. Good luck in the work that you do. Thank you very much indeed. 03456060973 is the number. Dave, I'll come to your call in a few moments. Next.
An AI companion is going to have a much richer, more kind of emergent, dynamic, interactive style. It will change, you know, every time you interact with it, it will give a slightly different response.
I think this is fascinating. This is Microsoft's head of artificial intelligence, Mustafa Suleiman, saying that a growing number of people are suffering from AI psychosis, where they believe that chatbots have become sentient or have imbued them with superhuman powers. Examples, he said, include people thinking that they have unlocked secret features, forming romantic attachments to an AI, or believing a chatbot has provided them with extraordinary abilities. Let's speak to Dr. Susan Shelmadine, medical imaging doctor and an AI academic. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, Doctor. What is this phenomenon? Is it a real thing? Morning.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks so much for having me on the show and bringing awareness to this really important problem. What I'd like to say, first of all, is it's not a diagnostic criteria. There isn't a checklist. There isn't an online quiz you can do to say whether or not you have this or not have this. But we are seeing a growing number of cases. And as you say, it's a collection of symptoms, beliefs that are quite extreme and a little bit detached from reality. And we are seeing this on the rise and with more and more people using AI chatbots and with AI capabilities increasing and becoming more powerful. We're getting worried that this isn't just something that only the few vulnerable are manifesting, but potentially even more of us in society might be at risk of this.
At risk of thinking or believing what?
Well, the thing about these AI chatbots is they give you information in a very, very ultra-processed way. It lacks context, it lacks nuance, it might be quite biased, and you're feeding it your own information, and it wants to please you. It's packaging information back to you that's palatable, digestible, very short, succinct. And in that way, you can be led down a path where your beliefs are influencing the AI's beliefs back to you. And before you know it, you may be prioritizing the AI's opinions, putting undue trust in it, having a little bit more detachment from what's real and what's not. So where that leads, we don't know yet. Mm. It's still early days, but we've seen the very, very extreme versions of that happening. And I'm really worried that what we're seeing are essentially the proverbial canaries in the coal mine, you know? Could this be a warning signal to us all later on?
That people's brains are being changed by this to come to odd beliefs about what's real and what's not?
Absolutely. We've seen early evidence, and please bear in mind, this is very early evidence, mm-hmm. that people's electrical brain patterns do change when they use these large language models and chatbots to when they don't. We also can see people's ways of decision-making behaviors, even what they believe is moral or ethical, being slightly influenced by what the AI is telling them.
One of the examples of this, apparently, is that people thinking that the AI is conscious, has a form of consciousness. Even if it appears like that, is that enough to think that it might do?
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, what is reality or not? It's your perception of it, isn't it? And if that's what you believe and what you hold to be true, then you can go quite far with that belief. Yeah. And so it is very important that we raise awareness that they aren't sentient beings, even if they appear to be. They don't have any accountability. They aren't going to be there for you when you're in trouble, even if it feels like they're very friendly and very influential and that they're saying, please, please keep in touch with me. I want to talk to you more.
Weird, isn't it? Through the looking glass with some of this stuff. Thank you so much for coming on, Dr. Susan Shelmadine, medical imaging doctor and an AI academic. I use this thing. ChatGPT is like Google now for me. I just use that. And then you question it and question it and question it. It's an amazing bit of kit. I would never, though, think that it was actually alive. Or is it? Nicola's in Horsham. Nicola.
Morning, Tom. Can I just say you're doing a great job of standing in for the tin?
Well, we try, you know, they're big shoes to fill. They're fucking huge.
Well done. I'd just like to say, I think this all comes down to fairness. We don't jump queues. We're brought up to respect and love our country and obey the law. So no one can say say the British aren't patient, as for 7 years, we've watched the lawlessness of the people coming over to the Channel, which I believe is around about 90% men, entering illegally. So it has taken 7 years for this anger to appear. And the papers are consistently covering the benefits that people are getting. You know, it used to take me a year to have 3 nights in Bournemouth, but, you know, they're getting all of these perks that most Brits can't afford. We're seeing a drop in our services. We see videos of these immigrants laughing at us out of their windows. And just one more thing I'd like to say. I feel really sorry for the people that come here legally, the hoops they have to jump through, the money they have to spend, and the years that it takes. Where of all of these mostly men are leapfrogging.
So would you be protesting outside one of these hotels, Nicola? Would you find yourself doing that?
Unfortunately, I work 13 hours a day. But yes, if I had the time...
Join the RMT.
I really, if I had the time, I absolutely would protest, yeah. But it's the government. I think people are just so sick of our incompetent government. We look at Georgia Maloney, we look at the Argentinian, and we look at Trump, and what he's just stood by his word. And what have we got? This weak, pathetic leadership, and he seems more interested in the rest of the world than he does this country.
Nicola, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. We'll actually get into, after the news at 8 o'clock, some of the criticism of the government coming from one of its own senior cabinet members, Wes Streeting, saying no one believes the change that Labour will be any good. We'll get into the details of that. Also,
we see footfall is holding up. People are going out, people are going to pubs, they're spending. The problem is that spend isn't coming down to the bottom line for the pubs.
The pub we told you about earlier in the week, charging 4% onto your bill for ordering at the bar, says the reason is Rachel Reeves. Is that true? And
it is vital to reach immediately a ceasefire in Gaza and the unconditional release of all hostages.
As Israeli troops encircle Gaza City, Benjamin Netanyahu says he wants peace, but only on Israel's terms.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Israel's defence minister has warned Gaza City could be destroyed unless Hamas ends the war on Israel's terms. The comments follow Benjamin Netanyahu's call for new talks to secure the release of all remaining hostages. The Prime Minister also approved plans to press ahead with the current ground assault.
I greatly appreciate the presence of the reserve soldiers and, of course, the regular army for this vital goal. At the same time, I have instructed to begin immediate negotiations on the release of all our hostages and an end to the war on terms acceptable to Israel.
Hamas signed up earlier this week to a temporary ceasefire proposal put forward by Egypt and Qatar. A number of protests and counter-protests are planned near hotels used as asylum accommodation. It follows the High Court's decision to grant a temporary injunction to remove migrants from a hotel in Epping. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details.
As councils across the country now look at their own legal action to try and close migrant hotels, police are preparing for dozens more protests and counter-demonstrations outside several of them this weekend. Figures showed the number of asylum seekers in hotels rose by 8% in Labour's first year in government, and there's a record number of people seeking refuge here. But the Home Secretary insists they're working to end hotel use by 2029.
Baby food manufacturers have been given 18 months to cut sugar and salt in their products. The new guidelines are intended to address growing concerns that children's development's being harmed by poor diets. Ministers say they will consider alternative measures if the guidelines aren't followed. President Trump has escaped a $500 million fine imposed in a civil fraud trial. It was imposed last year after his company was found to have routinely inflated the value of its properties. Judges upheld the fraud ruling but found the fine was excessive. Mr. Trump welcomed the decision on a visit to Washington.
They stole $550 million from me with a fake case, and it was overturned. They said this was a fake case. It's a terrible thing. But that's a nice victory, you know? I mean, it's not bad.
England are the home favourites going into the Women's Rugby World Cup. The Red Roses will open the tournament with a tie against the USA at Sunderland Stadium of Light this evening. 16 nations will play at venues across England in the coming weeks. In the city, the FTSE 100's reopening at 93.09. It closed up 21 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and the euro 15. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for most places, cooler and cloudier in central areas. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 4 minutes past eight the time on Friday, August the 22nd. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Hope we find you incredibly well. Before you put that thing in your mouth,
there's a glass and a half in everyone.
McVitie's, true originals.
Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
Legislation to restrict supermarket sales of junk food has led to a significant reduction in purchases, according to the first ever independent analysis. Maybe the nanny state's getting it right. Also,
it's always been the case in this country that there's been an obsession with the university route, and we've always treated technical education as something of a second-class option. Well, I don't think it is.
Getting it wrong is the country's university education system, according to Andy Burnham, who says we cannot carry on like this with, he says, two-thirds of students in Greater Manchester not taking the traditional university route, but not enough done to promote it to them. Is that true? We'll look at it.
Call 0345 6060 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
We turn first, though, this morning to the situation in the Middle East. Overnight, Benjamin Netanyahu saying that he was prepared to negotiate a peace, but only on Israel's terms, as troops encircle Gaza City, with reports that a famine has formally now been declared for the first time. The international body responsible for monitoring world hunger, the Food Security Phase Classification, have said that a food insecurity and malnutrition has been declared in and around that area. 60,000 Israeli reservists have been called up to support frontline military in this campaign. The Israeli Defence Minister putting this on X. We approved yesterday the IDF's plans to defeat Hamas in Gaza with intense fire, evacuation of residents and manoeuvring. Soon, says Israel Katz, the gates of hell will open upon the heads of Hamas's murderers and rapists in Gaza until they agree to Israel's conditions for ending the war, primarily the release of all hostages and their disarmament. If they do not agree, Gaza, the capital of Hamas, will become Rafah and Ben Hanun, exactly as I promised, so it shall be. The words of Israel's defence minister. Shana Lowe is a spokesperson from the Norwegian Refugee Council. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. What do you think is going to be the effect of this impending Israeli assault on Gaza City? Morning.
It's going to be catastrophic on top of the catastrophe that we have already been witnessing unfold over the last 22 plus months. Famine is being classified in Gaza City officially today. Other parts of Gaza, hunger is and malnutrition are quickly spreading, and the situation will get worse. To imagine around a million Palestinians are seeking shelter in Gaza City, facing famine, and are expected to either be displaced or killed in the bombardments. Many of these people have been displaced multiple times. They are incredibly weak. They are exhausted. They are already living in overcrowded shelters and displacement sites, and there simply is nowhere for them to go. There is no safe place in Gaza. The space in the south is already overcrowded, lacks services, lacks adequate food and protection. The only thing that can stop civilian suffering and bring the hostages home is a permanent, sustained ceasefire agreement and the opening of all crossings into Gaza and a massive scaling up of aid so that we and our partners in the humanitarian sector can go in and do our jobs, which is saving lives.
Completely understood. The reality is, though, political reality is, that Netanyahu doesn't seem likely to agree to terms that Hamas agreed to only a few days ago, unless Hamas release all the hostages and they move out of Gaza.
As a humanitarian, I can't speak to what their decisions are, but what I can say is that what we have seen, the use of starvation as a weapon of war, the targeting and bombing of civilian areas, the lack of safe space, the lack of protection for civilians, the destruction of the medical system, of infrastructure, of all key services, the obstruction of humanitarian agencies from doing our jobs. These are all violations of international humanitarian law. And regardless of whether or not these two parties can come to an agreement, the international community needs to put an end to this. It's too much.
When you hear the Israeli defense minister say the gates of hell will open upon the heads of Hamas murderers and rapists in Gaza, how do you feel?
Well, we know. We've seen the disproportionate civilian toll over the last 22 months. And so we know that that means that more civilians will be killed, more innocent civilians will be killed. People who have done nothing wrong other than being born Palestinian in Gaza. And that's unacceptable. We've seen that Israel does not take precautions to protect civilians. We see that Israel does not fulfill its obligations.
They say that
Israel time and again has not fulfilled its obligations under international law as an occupying power of Gaza to provide the basic needs of for survival for the population living under its control for the last nearly 60 years. Israel has very clear obligations that the international community knows, and they need to hold Israel accountable for violating those obligations.
And what obligations does Hamas have to provide safety for its people, to make sure
Hamas
that people
is not
have
the
got...
occupying power of the Gaza Strip.
Hamas is the reason why Israel says it can't
Israel
end this war.
Israel is the occupying power
but Hamas
of the
is
Gaza
the reason
Strip.
Why Israel says it cannot end this war without Hamas handing back the hostages.
The two parties must come to an agreement, and the international community must force that. That is the reality.
Right.
Hamas is underground. Hamas is not really very present above ground. That's irregardless of what Hamas's obligations are. Israel is the occupying power. Israel controls every single thing and every single person that enters or exits Gaza.
Shaina Lowe is a spokesperson from the Norwegian Refugee Council. 8:10 the time. Yotan Confino is a Middle East correspondent and author based in Herzliya in Israel. Thanks for coming on again, Yotan. The reaction in Israel to what Netanyahu said yesterday about a potential peace deal and this impending encircling of Gaza City.
Look, most Israelis would like to see a ceasefire. That goes without saying. The poll after poll for, well, I guess a year now, show that Israelis want a ceasefire to get the hostages out because they don't believe that military pressure will bring them out alive. On the contrary, it's actually going to endanger their lives. But I really want to touch on some of the things that the previous guest said, outright lies. It really saddens me to hear someone who's supposed to represent humanitarian organization literally don't even hold Hamas responsible for a single thing that happens in Gaza. It is astonishing. First of all, starvation is not being used as a weapon. 2 million tons of aid entered Gaza since October the 7th. Just yesterday, 400 trucks with aid were collected by the UN and other NGOs and distributed inside Gaza. 500 pallets of aid was airdropped, and nearly 2 million meals were provided by the GHS.
Well, I have to point you, Yotam, and I point you to the UN-backed Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, a globally recognized system for classifying the severity of food insecurity and malnutrition, saying that they are going to declare a famine in Gaza City.
I'm shocked that they are, because you know what? If you want to actually see what's happening on the ground in Gaza, in Gaza City, you can use open source intel. You could go, for example, and I know this sounds weird, but you can go on Snapchat. You can go and see what people in Gaza City themselves are sharing of videos. And I've done that the past couple of days. I see people making cinnamon rolls. They have flour. They have pasta. They have cheese, feta cheese. This is not images of famine. And I'm sorry to say very harshly this, because I've seen famine in Sudan and other places. This is not what famine looks like. I'm really sorry to say, but it is absurd to call it famine when they're literally, first of all, they are flooding Gaza with aid now. From the air, from the border crossings.
Israel did cut that off, though. I mean, they did stop aid
for 2 months. For 2 months. In after the ceasefire,
food as a weapon of war to bring pressure on Hamas.
I would say, first of all, it's unethical, but they did it after Gaza had been flooded with aid. There was supposed to have been nearly 5 months of worth of aid coming into Gaza during the period of the last ceasefire. When Hamas and Israel didn't agree to continue to the next phase, and Israel continued waging war against Hamas, they also decided to cut off aid, which I think was unethical. And that lasted around 2 months. I'm not saying the situation in Gaza is great by any means. It's hell. But I really think we need to have put things into proportion here. Like I said, images of famine, that's people literally sitting on the ground, not having anything to eat, with both children and adults looking emaciated. I've seen literally no video coming out of Gaza where you see people looking famined or famished at all.
There definitely are emaciated people. It's just whether or not their emaciation was down to malnutrition caused by a lack of aid, or whether it was down to pre-existing conditions, as has been reported elsewhere.
And that's what saddens me, because some of these kids who do look emaciated, they've been used, unfortunately, but for propaganda purposes. Some of them have severe underlying illnesses, and most of the major international news organizations had to issue corrections afterwards. Yes. Because they did not provide context.
If you look at other open source intelligence, indeed the photos that have been taken of Gaza from the air when journalists have been allowed to go on the planes to see what's going on,
yeah,
it's a bomb site. It's gone. There's nothing there.
But again, when you have that your previous guest saying that Israel doesn't do anything to try and get civilians out, that's a lie. Israel waited 3 weeks with entering northern Gaza after October the 7th, specifically because they wanted to move civilians out of harm's way. They haven't entered Gaza City yet, even though soldiers could do it now. They're not doing it because they want civilians to go out of harm's way. So to say that Israel doesn't...
A huge number of people, Yotam. I mean, the front page of The Guardian this morning say that figures from a classified Israeli military intelligence database indicate 5 out of 6 Palestinians killed by Israeli forces in Gaza have been civilians.
Again, drivel. I read the report. Absolute nonsense. Because they need to have Israel identifying with names every combatant that has been killed, which is virtually impossible in Gaza, because you have people walking around in flip-flops, T-shirts, and shorts with a Kalashnikov on their shoulder shooting people. They don't carry Hamas IDs, which means you cannot ID these people as members of terror groups, but they are combatants. This report is absolute drivel. The actual estimate of how many terrorists have been killed is somewhere between 20,000 and 25,000 in Gaza.
According to who?
According to Israel. That is Israel's
why is that
estimate.
Not drivel? Why is that seen as fact and not drivel, and this is seen as drivel and not fact?
Because they have an idea of how many people they killed. Could they exaggerate? Surely. But if we rely on a terror group, one of the worst vile terror groups in the world, if we rely on their numbers of how many people have been killed, by the way, they don't distinguish between combatants and civilians for one purpose only.
This is a report coming from, the Guardian say, an Israeli military intelligence database. Yotam, thank you very much indeed. Yotam Konfino is a Middle East correspondent, author based in Herzliya in Israel. The language, I mean, is appalling. Visiting the gates of hell opening on Hamas. I mean, that probably means a version of hellishness opening on people in Gaza City trying to get out. Netanyahu says he wants peace. Do you believe him? but only peace on Israel's terms. Hamas gone, hostages released. Hamas could release those hostages. They could have released those hostages a year and a half ago, but then they've chosen not to. 03456060973 is the number. Coming up...
Jeremy is a great person, but his life is 99% politics.
Great friend of Jeremy Corbyn, Diane Abbott, reportedly told him not to start a new party, but as it's revealed that quite a lot of people will be turning to Jeremy Corbyn's new outfit. We'll get details after this. 8:17, news headlines now. Thomas Watts.
Israel's Prime Minister has ordered negotiations to end the war in Gaza on terms acceptable to Israel. A number of protests and counter-protests are planned near hotels used as asylum accommodation. And makers of baby food have been given 18 months to cut salt and sugar in their products. LBC weather, another dry day with sunny spells for many, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. On the M1, a lane is closed northbound due to a broken down vehicle at Junction 10 for Luton Airport Spur Road. In Hackney, the A106 Catterland Road is blocked eastbound due to an accident from Terrace Road to Kenton Road. The A10 Great Cambridge Road in Tottenham is partially blocked southbound at the roundway. That's due to an accident as well. There are delays in Park Royal with the A406 North Circular partially blocked northbound due to emergency repairs at Tanger Lane. In Brixton, one lane is blocked on the A23 Brixton Hill because of a broken down car near the church. And on the tubes, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line due to problems with the signals at Knightsbridge and severe delays on the Jubilee line as well.
This is LBC.
Just because you can't see something doesn't mean it isn't there. You can't hold this in your hand or pack it in your bags. You can't touch it. But our network is around you, like oxygen. Near or far, we're there. That's why we've been awarded Best Mobile Network Coverage by Uswitch. O2, essential for living.
Based on Open Signal Awards, UK Mobile Network Experience Report, September 2024. To verify, see opensignal.com/UK Mobile Report.
The all-new LBC app. News your way. Download it for free from the App Store. This is LBC.
People ask me, what's my good place? Checking out the food trucks on the weekend with my partner. And knowing that Pension B helped me combine my pensions into one easy-to-manage plan.
Tacos?
Tacos.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
I'm Dr. Andrew Darwood from the Darwood & Tanner Dental Practice. For over 30 years now, with co-founder Dr. Susan Tanner, we've assembled a dedicated and caring multidisciplinary team of dental experts who are at the forefront of their field, all with just one purpose in mind, creating the most comprehensive, tailored and complete dental implant treatments to keep you smiling.
For more on dental implants and our full range of treatments, visit darwoodandtanner.co.uk.
Tesco Finest Sugar Bell Tomatoes. The ultimate supporting act. Zinging up salads or elevating fresh linguine. Perfect for when you want to be vined and dined. It's why only the finest varieties are hand-picked when perfectly ripe to ensure our Sugar Bell tomatoes are exceptionally sweet. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:21 is the time. We'll talk about domestic political matters in a few moments, specifically around the Labour Party and the party that is emerging to their left, the Jeremy Corbyn offering. Interested too in the words of Andy Burnham, the Labour mayor for Greater Manchester, who talks about the UK's university education system. I know a lot of people this week, you've got your A-level results, so you might be heading off to university in your house. He says, for too long, under all parties, education in England has been dominated by the university route. He says it's a great choice for many people, but to many of them who don't go that route, it feels like they are forgotten by an education system which doesn't give them the same priority to technical education, nor open up the same clear paths beyond school. Andy Burnham says, we cannot carry on like this. And I think he's right. I think there is a very good argument to be made that a university degree is becoming devalued by the the fact that there are so many of them. Why is it that so many jobs require any form of university degree? It might not be the right environment for your 18-year-old to go and educate themselves in or be educated in. But the other routes aren't very clear, are they? And they don't seem to be prioritised. They don't seem to be given the same status. We'll get into the details of that in a few moments. I want to take you back to the Middle East. Netanyahu saying that troops have now encircled Gaza City, but saying he wants peace. Peace on Israel's terms, which means Hamas surrender and they release the hostages. Nick is in Oxford. Hi, Nick.
Hello there.
Your thoughts, sir, on what you're hearing coming from the Israeli Prime Minister?
Yeah, I'm a surgeon. I've just returned from working in Gaza at Nasser Hospital for a month. I've returned 3.5 weeks ago. And I really am phoning up in response to your previous interviewee who was saying there's no evidence of any famine in Gaza. And that is simply not true at all. I witnessed the most appalling malnutrition throughout the 4 weeks I was in Gaza. This is my third trip to Gaza in the last 22 months. Each time I've seen worsening malnutrition. I've seen babies die of malnutrition. I've seen children die of malnutrition. I've seen adults die of malnutrition. I saw a little girl called Zainab who was 7 months old who died whilst I was there because there was no formula feed to give her at all. She was being fed with sugar water effectively. And at the same time she was dying, doctors I know who were coming into Gaza to join me because we had asked them to bring in formula feed, had formula feed taken away from their luggage by the Israeli border guards. So there is, beyond any doubt, a severe malnutrition, beyond any doubt leading to multiple deaths, and beyond any doubt, this is a man-made starvation forced upon them by Israeli blockade. And the evidence for that is overwhelming. So I wanted to completely refute your previous interviewee who claimed that was not the case.
Well, you've heard what the Israelis say, which is their argument is that there's enough food in Gaza, even with the blockade that they put on it, but that Hamas has controlled it and is blocking its distribution to a population that needs it.
So that needs to be completely refuted. I have been in Gaza for many weeks. I have been all around the south of Gaza. That is not the case. There are emaciated people who are walking around starving and hungry. As I said, there are Israeli border guards taking food, taking nutritional supplements, taking formula feed out of doctors' luggage, specifically so they cannot bring it into Gaza. All agencies, all humanitarian agencies who are based in Gaza are saying exactly the same thing. This is not. This is being restricted by Israel and Israel alone.
The call is going to be for proof, Nick, in the same way that there needs to be proof from the Israeli side that there are, you know, mountains of feta cheese and everyone's having a great time in Gaza City or whatever the allusions were cast by my last guest. Is that what you've got? I mean, there's evidence to your, not just your eyes, but there's photographs, there's video, there's all that.
I think the media in our country, our government, need to decide whether they want to believe the huge amount of evidence being produced by people like me and many other healthcare workers who have returned to Gaza, returned from Gaza with identical stories and photographs to support this evidence, or do they want to believe an Israeli propaganda machine which has failed to produce any verifiable or credible evidence. And it's as simple as that. People need to decide who they want to believe. Humanitarian workers who've got no axe to grind, no agenda, they are humanitarians to the core who have this evidence, have shown it to senior government officials, to senior government ministers, have shown it to media. Do they believe us or do they believe the propaganda which is being regurgitated out of Israel for which there is no verifiable and no credible evidence?
Nick, appreciate the call. Thank you very much indeed. A surgeon who's just returned from working out in Gaza. 8:27 the time. Next.
This is now larger than the largest Labour Party membership ever.
Jeremy Corbyn's new political venture could win over a quarter of Labour members, we're told. Of those surveyed, 28% said they were considering supporting the former Labour leader's new left-wing movement to be launched formally in the autumn, we're told. About 59% said Keir Starmer should pursue more left-wing policies, while 2% said he should move to the right. 35% called for a faster delivery of his current agenda. Andrew Fisher joins us, columnist at the iPaper, former senior policy advisor to Jeremy Corbyn. He wrote the 2017 and 29 Labour manifestos. Thank you for coming on the programme, Andrew. The criticism of Jeremy Corbyn, I guess, is that creating a split on the left makes it more likely that a party on the right wins next time. What do you say to that?
Well, I put that to Jeremy earlier this week when I interviewed him, because it's a legitimate question. And his response was, look, reform's message needs to be countered. That's what we'll be doing. We're not going to go into the gutter and blame refugees and asylum seekers. We need a force that stands up to that. And I think that polling you showed about the Labour Party means a lot of Labour voters, a lot of Labour Party members as well, don't feel the Labour Party is doing that. And actually, I think if you do make those arguments powerfully, you can win people over, perhaps who are even leaning to reform at the moment, and win them away from that type of messaging, this scapegoating of migrants. Because the problem of housing, the problem of underfunding of public services, it's not about a few thousand people in hotels. It's about the mass underfunding of our public services over the last 15 years. And that's been a recurring problem. That's why we're in the state we're in. You can blame scapegoats or you can new solutions, and actually the left should be about doing the latter.
So what is it, what are the solutions that Corbyn's party is offering then?
Well, I mean, yeah, look, it's a nascent party, so I don't want to speak for it. I'm not its spokesperson. I'm not even a member. I don't think you can be a member of it yet, but I'm not a member
of
it.
Not signed up,
either.
You're not registered online or something.
No, look, I'm a Labour Party member still. But look, I think it will argue for the sort of policies that Jeremy Corbyn did in 2017 and in 2019, which is about redistributive taxation. It's about investing in public services. I mean, he was very explicit to me when I interviewed him about reducing the arms budget as well and ending support for weapons of mass destruction as well. So there are ways you can shift the balance of the existing budget around. And there are, of course, options for raising more revenue through taxation.
What would be the primary way that a Jeremy Corbyn party, do you think, would do that? Whether it be forms of inheritance tax, questions around property valuation, all that that we've seen in the papers this week?
I don't know specifically. I mean, look, I know what was in the 2017 and 2019 manifestos, which was about a higher rate of tax on the very, very highest earners, the top 1% or 2%, about equalising capital gains tax with income tax. At the moment, you pay a lot less tax on assets you derive, you know, on gains you get from assets, whether that's housing or shares or dividends from shares and so on.
Would you want to see, as being muted in the papers, capital gains tax applied to the sale of primary residences?
Me personally, no. I think that's I don't think that's right, because the reason people sell a house is often to move into another one. So if you tax that, you have to downsize effectively. It'd be a tax on living, and it forced people to stay in places they don't particularly want to stay in. It could hamper the labour market as well.
Actually. Wow,
I think that's
Andrew,
quite a bad policy.
This is thrilling to hear that you would be opposed to that, because I think
I'm
madness.
For much tougher taxation on second and third and, you know, landlords' portfolios, but I'm not for people's primary residence. Look, if you live somewhere, that's your home. Housing is a basic human right. We shouldn't be taxing people's primary residence.
What about a 60% or 70%? Inheritance tax?
Look, I'm in favour of greater inheritance tax. You know, if I work for my money, you know, great, it shouldn't be taxed too harshly. But look, if I get some money that somebody else has left me, that someone else has worked for, that's not anything I've earned. I think it's perfectly legitimate to pay inheritance tax. I don't have a problem with that at
legitimate.
All. And let's face it, at the moment, the threshold is very high. You know, anything under 325,000, in most cases, actually anything under a million, you don't actually pay inheritance tax on, because of the way the system works. So it's only a tax on the very, you know, biggest assets, the very richest estates that people might inherit. And I think it's fair that we, you know, use some of that to fund the NHS, to fund schools, and to fund the public services.
Yes, well, some of that is 40% of it is above that threshold. But you would want to see that threshold come down, or the percentage increased, or both?
Look, I think possibly, but look, I think the biggest issue actually around inheritance tax is some of the loopholes that are there at the moment, which enabled people like the Duke of Westminster, the previous Duke of Westminster, I should say, when he died, to evade taxation completely on an £8 billion estate. Now, that's a loss of about £2 or 3 billion to the Exchequer. That's a lot. And that's just one case. You know, obviously one of the biggest cases, but it's just one case. And you do see people who are the super rich, who have got, you know, very good accountants, who set up trusts and so on to evade inheritance tax. And that's what they're doing. Whereas for people, you know, whose, you know, aunt or mother or grandmother dies in a kind of, you know, fairly bog standard now, semi-detached house in London or the southeast, they pay their inheritance tax. They haven't got that facility to try and avoid it like that. Well, that, and it's that, not fair that those loopholes aren't closed.
I would agree with you about the loopholes. I just think there is an sort of principal difficulty in saying that the state has a right to some of the money, some of the value that is in a property bought by a family member. I find that in principle quite difficult. Andrew, thank you. Andrew Fisher is a columnist at the iPaper, former senior policy advisor for Jeremy Corbyn. The Corbyn party could win over a quarter of Labour members, we're told. Would that be you? Do you see them as an alternative? Wes Streeting, cabinet minister, criticising his own government, saying, well, no one quite believes that the change we say we're going to bring about is going to make anything better, which is a problem, isn't it? We'll get into the details in just a few moments. Coming up,
this is a really positive step to bring in this legislation from the government in England for now, but it could be even better.
Turns out that the laws around the sale of junk food has led to a significant reduction in purchases, according to the first ever independent analysis carried out by it. Is that a sign that the nanny state, well, she's working? Get to your calls in a moment. 8:33, news headlines, Thomas Watts.
The Israeli Defence Minister, Israel Katz, has promised to destroy Gaza City if Hamas fails to disarm. He's warned the group must accept Israel's decision conditions for ending the war as troops prepare for a new ground assault. A wave of potential protests and counter-protests are expected at asylum hotels in the coming days. It follows the High Court's decision to grant a temporary injunction to remove migrants from a hotel in Epping. Ministers are planning a crackdown on people who claim child benefit after they've left the UK. It's thought the move to hire more investigators could save £350 million over 5 years. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many this afternoon, cooler and cloudier in central areas, a high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. Rest every 2 hours too. I inspect tire pressure and tread. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv. Offer ends 27th of August.
Who's a good human? Jenny is. Because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
8:35 the time. Talk about the declining sales of junk food in Britain as a result of, they say, the legislation that restricts the sale of junk food. That, of course, is going to have a big impact on the obesity crisis, or in theory, a big impact on the obesity crisis, although, to be honest, sounds like Mounjaro and Ozempic are doing a lot of the heavy lifting on that. Stephen's a first-time caller in Leeds. You want to come back to the situation in the Middle East, Stephen? Hi.
Yeah, hello, Tom. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. So just as the consultant from Oxford refuted the suggestions of the famine in Gaza, I'd like to refute his suggestions. It must be very hard for a surgeon going over there, and I admire anybody who tries to give some humanitarian aid. But you've got to understand that the country, or Gaza, not the country, Gaza is run by a death cult. This is a death cult that has no feeling for human life and doesn't care what happens to its own civilians. doctors go in there to treat people, if all the doctors who went in filled their suitcases with aid for the children and the civilians, I could understand why the Israeli border control wouldn't let it in, because that's not a valid way of getting aid into the country. The valid way of getting aid in is through the humanitarian...
Yes, but that's his maybe, Stephen, but I'm afraid it doesn't quite destroy the fact, as the doctor saw it, that there are children dying because they can't get the nutrition they need when in the hospital, and there is, you know, baby formula being blocked by the doctors who are wanting to take it in.
Well, yes, because it's not the rational route to take it in.
Hamas Stephen, those two things are true. I agree. Hamas is a death cult. Okay. They should go. They need to surrender. They shouldn't be allowed any...
And return the hostages.
They shouldn't be... And return the hostages. They should not be allowed to have any say in the future of Gaza at all. They forfeited that right when they committed October the 7th.
So we agree
on that. We agree on that. Absolutely, sir. We're very, very in total agreement on that. But that doesn't mean to say that blocking baby formula from entering Gaza is the right thing to do by the Israeli government in order to try and bring about that conclusion.
It isn't, if it was in isolation. But what I'm saying is there is aid going into the country, and it has been blocked by Hamas.
Yes. But you can't, I mean, there is the quality of the information is rather different. With respect to... When was the last time you were in Gaza? I don't know. Have you been to Gaza? I'm not sure.
No, but I've been to Israel. And let me tell you something.
That's not quite Gaza, is it? I mean, I've been to Israel.
Absolutely not. And thank goodness, and I wouldn't dare go into Gaza. And
right, so there's a doctor who has been into Gaza.
Yeah.
And we'll take him at his word that he is telling the truth about what he saw and what he dealt with.
Absolutely.
And there you are, sir, with the greatest respect, you are... you haven't been to Gaza recently.
No.
Trying to say that what he's saying isn't true.
No, I'm not saying it's not true. I'm saying about the fact that...
But you said you came on to say you were here to refute him. How can you do that?
I was here to refute that the reason... So there is malnutrition. I agree with that. There is malnutrition in Gaza. What there is, though, is aid coming into the country, which in a formal way...
distributed. Yes, there is now. But there wasn't before.
Well, there was before.
Stephen, they put a blockade on it. They blockaded it. They stopped it. The Israelis stopped it from entering. That is also true. Got to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed for the call. 03456060973 is the number you need both to ring and also to send messages on WhatsApp. Next.
There's a glass and a half in everyone.
McVitie's. True originals.
Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
Legislation to restrict supermarket sales of junk food has led to a significant reduction in purchases, according to the first ever independent analysis done by the University of Leeds, which estimated that 2 million fewer products high in fat, salt or sugar were sold per day after the new law took effect. Anna Taylor is Executive Director of the Food Foundation. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme, Anna. What law is this that has led to this change?
So this is quite a common sense regulation, really, which restricts supermarkets primarily from positioning the most unhealthy foods in the spots in the supermarket where we're most prone to kind of impulse purchasing. So that's things like the checkout area, the end of the aisles. And I think it's really good news, actually, today, because it shows just how powerful these environments are in shaping our choices. And as you say, 2 million fewer of these really unhealthy products purchased a day is a good step in the right direction. Not enough yet, sadly, but a really important step. And I think what it shows is that, you know, many people are going into store with the best of intentions and coming out often with things that they didn't quite...
Yeah.
want to buy.
Well, and
what it's doing is helping to make it a little bit easier for people to buy what they want.
To go over the numbers, 11.6 billion items were analysed. Wow. Tesco's, Morrison, Sainsbury's, Asda, so the big supermarkets, they say before the legislation was implemented, 20 out of every 100 items sold were high fat, salt, sugar products that fell within the scope of the legislation. That number dropped to 19 after. So,
yeah.
It's, you know,
it's not a massive drop out of per 100 items, but if there are 11.6 billion items being sold, that is a lot.
Right, exactly. So it's sort of significant in its own right, but it shows that this is just one little bit of these environments in which we're making decisions about what to eat. So other things, you know, that the government needs to be thinking about are the sort of advertising, the relative prices of these of unhealthy and healthy foods, the packaging, all kinds of things which contribute to shaping our choices. So this is one little bit of it.
Do we have good definitions of whether something that is high fat has the wrong kind of fat in it? Do you know what I mean? Like a steak, a piece of steak is probably very high fat, but that fat's not as bad for you as, in theory, perhaps, as the rubbish that's ploughed into chocolate and sweets and all that.
Yeah, I mean, the government has a, you know, a sort of scientifically verified method for determining. And in fact, these regulations applied to a sort of subset of those foods which are classified as being high in fat, sugar or salt. So tend to focus on more of the packaged and processed foods. So wouldn't be picking up things like a steak. So yes, I mean, the methods behind it all are really rigorous scientifically. That doesn't mean that you end up ultimately with lots of highly nutritious foods that check out or the end of on the aisle. In fact, what consumers fed back in this research was they actually would like to be seeing some of those really good foods promoted, not just the sort of slightly less healthy ones.
Do you then finally think that those people who eat a lot of these highly processed foods, ultra processed foods, are in that sense a victim of advertising, of marketing, of packaging, of those that they are victimised in that sense?
Well, I think we have environments which are very disempowering for people to actually do the things that they want to do. Many, many people in Britain are trying to lose weight at any given time. But the environment, all of the environments around them are really kind of stacked against them. So I think some of these regulations, which are sort of really quite, as I said, common sense, actually empower people to be able to do the things that they want to do, and rather than getting in their way and making it that much harder.
Thank you very much indeed for coming on. Anna Taylor is the Executive Director of the Food Foundation. So the law seems to be having the effect that it was intended to have, which is, I guess, good for the people that made the law, that there are fewer high fat, sugar or salt items being bought at the supermarket. Did you need that? So you needed that bit of legislation, didn't you? You couldn't just walk out of the supermarket and not bother buying the thing that's stuffed in front of your face or the thing that is literally put at your child's eye level deliberately so that your child is drawn to it to ask you to buy it for them. You needed this law in place in order to remove that from your site because you couldn't be trusted to walk out the shop without buying it. That's unfair, isn't it? That's probably a bit mean. Because if we're honest, this ultra-processed food is absolutely everywhere. You can't move for it. It's the first, I would say, tell me if I'm wrong, this is the first time in human history that poverty is connected to being overweight. Throughout the course of human history, if you're poor, you're going to be in a form of malnourishment, which means that you are underweight. Now we have a form of malnourishment if you are more likely if you are poor, that means you are overweight because the things you are eating are terrible for you. So is it nanny state to think that a law could be brought in to make it a bit easier to avoid this stuff? Get into the details in just a moment. 8:45 the time. Next.
National insurance going through the roof, and we need to have a bit of slack. It feels quite desperate, frankly.
We took you to the pub earlier this week, a particular pub that was applying a 4% service charge to drinks bought at the bar. That pub says the reason why it's brought it in is because of Rachel Reeves. Bring you the details after this. Thomas Watts here with your news headlines.
Israel's defence minister has warned Gaza City could be destroyed unless Hamas ends the war on Israel's terms. A number of protests and counter-protests are planned near hotels used as asylum accommodation. And the government's announced a crackdown on people who claim child benefit after they've left the UK. LBC weather, another dry day with sunny spells for many, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. In Hackney, the A106 Castleland Road is blocked eastbound due to an accident from Terrace Road to Kenton Road. The A10 Great Cambridge Road in Tottenham is partially blocked southbound at the roundway. That's due to an accident. In New Cross, Hatcham Park Road is closed eastbound from the A2 New Cross Road to Camplin Street because of a building fire earlier. There are delays in Park Royal with the A406 North Circular partially blocked northbound due to emergency repairs at Hanger Lane. Things are slow on the M4 Heathrow Spur Road southbound before the tunnels into the terminals, and on the tubes there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line due to problems with the signals at Knightsbridge and Gloucester Road, and there are severe delays on the Jubilee line.
This is LBC.
Pump 6 in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Have I won a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
LBC.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, love. Just spoke to Zara from St. James's Place.
Your financial advisor?
Yeah, we've made a plan. Retire early, travel more. Peru first.
Ooh.
Bless you. And Zara's plan means I can help more with your house deposit.
Thanks again, Dad.
Planning for the future calls for invaluable advice. Visit St. James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St. James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 25.
The Virgin Atlantic Holiday Sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in-store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
This bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
Would anyone like some Bourneville dark chocolate?
Is it so dark the aftertaste lasts for a week?
No.
Does it taste really, really complicated?
What? Is it saturated in nibs?
So dark it comes with a therapist?
To the uneducated palate, does it taste like burnt tyre?
Would scientists compare the taste to dark matter?
Is it artisanal, in all caps?
Are the tasting notes gloom?
No, no pretentiousness, no complexity, no bitterness. Just smooth dark chocolate from Cadbury. Cadbury Bourneville, made to be enjoyed, not endured.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
8:49 the time. To mark your card in the next hour of the programme, I want to pick up on comments of the Labour Mayor for Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, talking about the future of tertiary education, post-school education. He says, for too long, under all parties, education in England has been dominated by the university route, that other options need to be much, much more available and have the same status attached to them as going to university. He says, we cannot carry on like this, with 50% of school leavers heading off to university. Do you think that's true? I do, actually. We'll get into the details of that after the news at 9 o'clock. We'll talk about, well, we'll go to the pub, why not, Friday. We'll go to the pub in a minute. Dave's in Hammersmith, though, coming back to the situation in Gaza. Dave.
Hi there. The only person you've had on this morning that's got any relevant experience is the doctor that's actually been in Gaza. And everything he said is absolutely true. Your last caller, he might have been to Israel. Mm-hmm. He's not been to Gaza. He doesn't know. You can, if you actually look on the coast of, between Gaza and Israel, only a couple of miles up the coast, people are sat on the beaches, or they'll be sat on the beaches today, sat in the sun, sunbathing. Only a few miles down the coastline, people are being absolutely devastated. So unless anyone's actually been there and seen it through their own eyes, as far as I'm concerned, they don't really have a relevant opinion.
And you're going to say what, Dave? You have been there?
I have, yes. I was part of a humanitarian organisation delivering aid there.
When was that, sir?
It was last year.
Right.
And what we saw there were war crimes, flat-out war crimes. We witnessed a number of tanks roll up to a hospital and open fire, basically. Luckily, we were at some distance. But what is happening there is nothing short of just absolute terror. The Israeli journalist, or the journalist you had on earlier, who was based in Israel, he sounded like a Russian. He sounded no different from the Russians when Chernobyl blew up, where they were like, "Oh no, absolutely, everything's absolutely fine. All the media is absolutely false." It's wild that they are using what is essentially the Russian playbook to downplay everything that is happening over there. The propaganda that's coming out of Israel.
Well, propaganda in a war is not a surprise. I mean, that happens on all sides, doesn't it? I mean, there is Hamas propaganda, there is Israeli propaganda. That's the fog of war, isn't it? People compete for narratives. A lot of war is politics, I'm afraid. So from what you saw, Dave, you saw what? You say you saw war crimes.
Yeah, there was one example. There was some colleagues of mine, saw an elderly man shot on the beach and left, by the IDF. All he was doing was searching for scraps on the beach, and that's just one example. I won't go into too much more because it's pretty dreadful what's going on out
there.
Well,
listen.
But why the rest of the world is stood around and watching what is going on. Yes, I know there's propaganda coming out from both sides, and some of the stuff that's coming from Gaza might not be 100% legit, but what you see in these children that are suffering, the women and children, is just not proportional to what's going on. What Hamas did in October was absolutely dreadful.
As there is obviously a requirement for Israel to act within international law in its obligations to civilians when it's taking out this military effort. Of course there is, and if they've fallen foul of that, they absolutely should be punished for it. Hamas don't have to abide by that because they're not responsible for any international, because they're not part of an international body like that, because they're a terror group. Where is the obligation on Hamas to do what is right for the citizens of Gaza, which is to surrender and to hand back the hostages?
Yeah. Yes, you're absolutely right. You can't argue against that. It's the Hamas are causing just as much terror on their own people as to what Israel are causing.
And did you see that, Dave, when you were in Gaza? Did you see evidence of that?
I can't say I did see that. I just saw a lot of suffering.
All right. Dave, I really appreciate it. Amazing calls this morning on this. Dave, thank you very much indeed. Really appreciate that. 8:54 is the time. Next.
People are going to the pub. It is just that costs are so high that you have to charge more, and you can only charge so much before people stop coming.
Got a massive reaction this when we covered it on the show the other day. In fact, I put a clip on my Instagram at tswarbrick1 of our reporter's bill when he went to this particular pub and paid £7.95 for a pint of Guinness, and then was charged 4% service charge because he'd had the temerity to buy it at the bar. The pub that have brought this in, the Well and Boot in Waterloo Station, say the reason is because of Rachel Reeves's national insurance raid. Mark Bridgen is the owner of The Dog at Wingham Pub in Canterbury. Thanks for coming on the programme, Mark. To what extent do you blame Rachel Reeves' national insurance raid for the difficulties that your pub is experiencing? Morning.
Morning, Tom. It just feels like potentially the final nail in the coffin for many, many pubs, operators, restaurants. You know, it's already been very, very tough times. Last couple of years, we had the utility crisis to start. We've then had inflation on all fronts of everything we buy. And then for many, the interest rates have raised a new challenge. So it's been very, very difficult. So to then, when we know that the hospitality industry is on its knees, to then bring in national insurance contributions, employers NIC, that is going to be crippling on any industry that has a very, very high staff to revenue ratio, it's going to hurt, and it is really, really hurting.
How's it showing itself in your pub?
Well, for us, we're looking at, you know, depending on the month, you know, £2,000-£3,000 increased costs. Wow. On our payroll. Wow. And nothing has changed. We're hiring, well, the problem, I'm saying we're hiring the same people. If people are leaving, we're now probably not replacing them. We're cutting hours on everyone. You know, our costs are colossal. And yeah, like that clip said, people are coming to the pub, but their footfall is down and spends are down because all of the strains and stresses that the hospitality business is feeling, the public are feeling at home.
Yeah.
Increased utility, you know, everyone's feeling this, but the scale that we operate at, the numbers are massive. And to have, you know, our wage bill's gone up 3 years in a row by approximately 10% with the minimum wage increase. And for it then to go up another 5% with employers, yeah, NIC, it feels like the final nail in the coffin is being hammered in by Rachel Reeves.
Would you consider charging an extra 4% if someone bought the drink from the bar? Sort of an additional service charge?
This is a bit of a tricky one to talk about because also last October some law changes came in around service charge. So service charge has to go to all of the staff. So that won't be benefiting the business. So I don't understand that play. The only way that a business can start to cover their costs now is to increase their prices.
Yes.
You know, service charge legally now has to 100% be paid to the staff. Now, if they're using it as a way of paying staff more so that they can hire in, you know, be more competitive in challenging times in the labour market, then that plays out. But yeah, it doesn't really work as a way of the pub generating more revenue for itself.
And finally, Mark, when you pour a pint and you say to the patron, the customer, that'll be £7.20 or £6.80 or whatever it is, do you do it with a slight sigh and a kind of a slightly apologetically? Because the prices, yeah, are ludicrous, man.
No. Yeah, you're absolutely right. No publican is enjoying the way we've had to increase our prices over the last 2-3 years. And it's insane, the price of a pint now. Even out, you know, we're in the middle of nowhere and we're charging between £5 and £6.80 a pint. I never drink. And the problem is, 20% of that goes to the Chancellor as well. So every time we put our prices up, you know, we don't see it all anyway. It is becoming nearly impossible for our hospitality businesses and particularly our pubs.
Mark, I wish you well. Thank you very much indeed. If you're anywhere near it, get yourself to the Dog at Wingham pub in Canterbury. I'm sure its owner, Mark Bridgen, will look after you. Thank you very much indeed for your time. 8:59, coming up after the news.
Awareness has increased over the years, particularly because of COVID and people being taken out of their normal lives into very different circumstances. Suddenly the symptoms become much harder to deal with.
A female executive who was sacked for allegedly becoming so drunk at a work event that she slept in a sauna was discriminated against due to her ADHD. We'll get into the details of that employment tribunal ruling. And
part of our plan for change, we're committed to building lots more homes across the country. And in order to do that, we need more people in skilled trades like bricklaying.
For too long, says Labour Mayor Andy Burnham, under all parties in this country, the university route of education has dominated. He says we cannot carry on like this. Is he right?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, Israel's defence minister has threatened to destroy Gaza City unless Hamas accepts Israel's terms to end the war. Israel Katz has warned the gates of hell will open unless the group agrees to disarm and release all hostages. Troops are preparing for an expanded offensive in Gaza City. Middle East correspondent Yotam Confino says that's at odds with public opinion in Israel.
Poll after poll for
well, I guess a year now, show that Israelis want a ceasefire to get the hostages out because they don't believe that military pressure will bring them out alive. On the contrary, it's actually going to endanger their lives.
Hamas signed up earlier this week to a temporary ceasefire proposal put forward by Egypt and Qatar. Police are making preparations for potential protests near hotels used to house asylum seekers. It follows the High Court's decision to grant a temporary injunction to remove migrants from a hotel in Epping in Essex. A number of protests and counter-protests are planned in the coming days. Shadow Minister Katie Lamb has told Tom that she welcomes people having their voices heard.
I think it's appropriate that they're heard where people live. That's what people are worried about. That's what people's concerns focus around. And when you see particularly parents, particularly mums, genuinely concerned about walking home at the end of the day, about their children walking home at the end of the day, I think it is appropriate that that's where they should protest.
Ministers have announced an expanded effort to stop people receiving child benefit after leaving the UK. It follows a successful trial using travel data to track fraudulent claims. They say the expanded team of investigators could save £350 million over 5 years. Baby food makers have been told to change their recipes to reduce salt and sugar. The government says it will consider alternative measures if the new guidelines aren't followed in the next 18 months. A union has warned staff at a steelworks rescued by the government still face huge uncertainty. Ministers have taken control of speciality steels plants in South Yorkshire to save more than 1,400 jobs. The GMB says discussions about longer-term ownership need to begin very soon. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was 92.89. That's down 19. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, dry for many with some good sunny spells, cooler and cloudier in central areas, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Ah, the satisfaction of a perfectly installed soft close drawer. The joy of your first hot shower since the boiler was fixed. And that's the sound of another glowing customer review, because Checkatrade approved tradespeople score on average 9 out of 10. From plumbing to roofing to electrics, download the app. Checkatrade, a job done right. Checkatrade, checkatrade.com. 9 out of 10 customer rating based on average reviews in 2024.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick.
Morning to you, 3 minutes past nine, the time. Tom Swarbrick in for Nick Ferrari at breakfast this Friday morning on LBC. I hope we find you very well indeed. Coming up,
it would be really helpful if we could tackle the stigma and if people could know just how prevalent this is. It isn't a condition that we live with. It's the way that our brain is wired.
The female executive on £220,000 a year as the vice president of an engineering firm, sacked after allegedly becoming so drunk at work she slept in a sauna. She, though, managed to claim through an employment tribunal she was discriminated against due to her ADHD. Is that something that you feel you've experienced? Details to come.
Call 0345 6060 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Very good morning to you. First this hour.
It's always been the case in this country that there's been an obsession with the university route, and we've always treated technical education as something of a second-class option. Well, I don't think it is.
Around the country this week, households have been preparing for their not-so-little ones anymore to head off to university. A-level results week allows the kids who get their results to think about the excitement of their future going to university. Those who don't, it's obviously probably a little bit stressful going through clearing, but universities' doors are open. They need bodies in there. Frankly, they need paying customers. Such are the problem with university finances at the moment. For that seems to be, that over the last 30 years, the primary recipient of students once they have left school. The Labour Mayor for Greater Manchester, Andy Burden, from whom you just heard, says for too long, under all parties, education in England has been dominated by the university route. He says, don't get me wrong, that is a great choice for many young people. The UK has some of the best in the world. It's good that these days they are open to many more than they used to be. The problem is, he says, it is not right for everyone. In Greater Manchester, two-thirds of young people don't take the traditional university route. To many of them, it feels like they are forgotten by an education system which doesn't give the same priority to technical education, nor open up the same clear paths beyond school. The truth is, about a third to a half of young people will have a clear direction ahead through A-levels, UCAS and university, while a majority will be left to work out for themselves the best way to plan their journey towards the world of work. He says, Andy Burnham says, we cannot carry on like this. The time has come for a major overhaul of our education system to create one similar to the German model based on parity between academic and technical routes. Society needs both, but for almost three decades, politicians have been obsessed by only one. Do you think that's true? That the age of 50% of school leavers going to university is probably coming to an end because university is not providing the path it once did to a gilded life of great wages and nice jobs, or that it's not providing the ability to see difference in the ability of the students that are going through university because there are too many places offering pretty much the same type of qualification. Martin Birchall is editor of the Sixth Former's Guide to Degree Apprenticeships and managing director of High Flyers Research. Thank you for coming on the programme, Martin. Do you think Andy Burnham is right in his assessment that we cannot carry on like this?
Oh, I think he's spot on. If you look at the data, the number of students going to university has doubled over the last 30 years. It was Tony Blair who set the target that 50% of school leavers should go to university. But when you look at the latest official figures, only 45% of those who graduate from university get a graduate level job. So it means that over half end up either doing a job they could have done straight from school, or they're unemployed or have to take time out and go travelling and, you know, take other routes. But the bottom line is all of those coming out of university will have debts of between £40,000 and £50,000. But only 45% to get a graduate level job, it seems a really poor return on investment. So what Andy Burnham is pushing is that there is a huge opportunity for apprenticeships. Twice as many people started an apprenticeship last year as got a graduate level job. So there are many, many more opportunities. And yet at many schools, they just aren't talked about. So I do talks all around the country, and it's not uncommon for schools to say, well, look, please don't mention apprenticeships. It's not what we do here.
Really?
Our sixth formers go to university.
Ah, I wonder if that's because of pressure from parents. The parents' expectation is that their son or daughter will end up at a university, because that's what, quotes, success looks like.
Absolutely. And schools are really good at putting people through the UCAS process. So once you've chosen the subject you want to study, they're very good at helping people find the right course and the right direction. But the bottom line is 5 out of 6 school leavers don't know what it is they want to do for their careers that follow. So many end up choosing a subject they were great at A-level. So, you know, I love history, so I'm going off to do 3 years of a history degree. But there's very little thought given in terms of, well, what does that lead to? And hardly any of the big graduate employers are looking for history degrees. 70% of graduate jobs, it doesn't matter what you've studied. So going to university is a fantastic option if you want some more thinking time, but you've actually got to be really switched on in terms of what the job hunting process then looks like, because your degree on its own isn't going to get you the job.
I'll put this to you, Martin, because I hear it quite a lot in some of the criticism of the position that you hold, which is this is pulling up the ladder behind you. This is condemning a lot of young people to do something that is far more sort of hands-on, technical in that sense, but isn't going to get them the kind of life that they would want if they'd gone to university, which would.
So if we look specifically at degree apprenticeships, so they were introduced just over 10 years ago. That offers the chance to earn as you learn. So you start a full-time job, but one day a week you'll be studying for a degree. And that's not just about technical education. You can do that as a training route to becoming a fully qualified solicitor. You could be an engineer. You could be an accountant. And the deal is those employers will pay you a salary for each of the 4 years you're on the degree apprenticeship, and they will pay all of your university tuition costs. So somebody like perhaps one of the big four accounting firms Instead of going through university, they will take you straight from 18. They will give you all the professional training. And at the end of 4 or 5 years, you will become a fully qualified chartered accountant. And it won't have cost you a penny. You'll have had a salary all the way through. So that isn't pulling up the ladder of opportunity. That is opening up another route for those who say, well, I just can't afford to go to university. How would I cover my living costs while I'm there? This is a way to earn as you learn. But the catch is, you've got to know as an 18-year-old, I definitely want to be a solicitor, exactly. Or I definitely want to be an engineer.
Because you don't want to get 2 years into that and go, whoops, made a mistake. Martin, thank you. Martin Birchall is editor of the Sixth Former's Guide to Degree Apprenticeships. Nick Hillman is director of the Higher Education Policy Institute think tank, former special advisor to the ex-universities minister, David Willetts. Thanks for coming on the programme, Nick. It's had its day, says Andy Burnham.
Universities? I mean, absolutely not. I mean, there was a lot your previous speaker said that I disagreed with, but at the end, he was praising degree apprenticeships, and they are just another way of getting a degree, another way of getting a university degree. But most young people who want to get higher education actually still go down the traditional route, including in Andy Burnham's city of Greater Manchester, where there are many, many very successful universities that transform people's lives.
So what is it that he's complaining about? What is it that he thinks isn't working?
Well, I think Andy does make one very powerful point, which is the half of the population that don't go on to higher education, whether that's regular higher education or a degree apprenticeship, do have pretty poor options open to them. And that's where he's drawing a distinction between our country and other countries. What we do in Britain very well is university level education. What we do quite badly is picking up the pieces for people whose schooling hasn't worked out. So one of the things Andy's talking about is getting young people who want to stop their education at GCSEs, get them much more in work experience, placements in employers. It's very difficult, by the way, for employers to do that. All sorts of health and safety and safeguarding rules kick in if you take a young person on board. There's also a lot of politics going on here. Look, Andy Burnham is mayor of Greater Manchester. He doesn't have responsibility for the school curriculum. That's set at a national curriculum level in Westminster. So part of this is about passing the buck back to Westminster because he thinks there are educational problems in the schools that are in his area.
To what extent has a university degree been devalued by so many people being able to get one?
Well, it hasn't really. I mean, there is some evidence in the earnings, graduate earnings data, that it's gone down a little bit.
Almost level, graduate and non-graduate earnings.
No. I mean, it does depend who you're talking about. If you're talking about averages, going to university, you're still more likely to have a significantly higher earnings. You're much less likely to be unemployed. You're likely to have better health. You're even likely to live longer, better physical health and better mental health. You're more likely to be a civic engaged member of society. All the evidence is really, really clear. That doesn't mean university's right for everybody. But the other reason is that all sorts of employers, including some fairly low-paid jobs like nursing, the employers, in this case the NHS, say you've got to have a degree to become a nurse.
Why?
Well, because there's evidence from all over the world that you're less likely to die in a hospital with a higher proportion of graduate nurses.
But why? I take that point. You want highly educated staff coming into the place. That's great. But why is the university route the only way in which they can get to that qualification?
Because the government's decided so that is the route to become a nurse. I mean, you can do it through an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Still a degree at the end, because what you want, as you said, is higher. You want highly trained nurses with a higher level of qualifications than in the past. Teachers too. I mean, historically, teaching was not a graduate profession. Historically, teachers did not need degrees. I am really, really pleased that the teachers in my kids' school have degrees, because they're better teachers than if they didn't have degrees, and they know more about their subject, they know more about pedagogy, they know more about childcare than if they didn't have degrees. Because if the longer you learn, the more you know.
Good to talk to you. Nick Hillman, director of the Higher Education Policy Institute think tank, former special advisor to the ex-universities minister, David Willetts. Society needs both, says Andy Burnham. For almost three decades, though, politicians have been obsessed by only one route. That is the university route. Whether it's nursing or teaching, historically, which didn't need degrees, you now need one. I think even going into the police, you need a degree. A university degree. Why? Why is that seen as the only way? You go into a university, doesn't have to be a particularly good one, you come out with a degree in something or other, that qualifies you to at least try and get a job in the police or in nursing or wherever. Is that a good way of getting through the door of an employer? Isn't a better way to show that you can do the job? You're trained up in the job, you're paid a bit to do the job, you make those contacts, you create your networks, and then on you go in the career, whether it's being a solicitor, an engineer, or an accountant. That's, if you want to do that, why is that not being heralded as a much better option for people than ploughing money and time into a not particularly valuable university degree and coming out with a heck of a lot of debt? 0345 6060 973. Do you think Andy Burdham is right to say the time has come for a major overhaul of our education system, particularly when it comes to universities? Get into the details after the 9:16 news headlines now. Thomas Watts.
Israel's defence minister has warned Gaza City could be destroyed unless Hamas ends the war on Israel's terms. A number of protests and counter-protests are planned near hotels used as asylum accommodation. And the government's announced a crackdown on people who claim child benefit after they've left the UK. LBC weather, another dry day with sunny spells for many, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. In Warden, the A23 Purley Way is blocked southbound due to an accident from Croydon Road to Stafford Road. In New Cross, Hatch and Park Road is closed eastbound from the A2 New Cross Road to Camplin Street because of a building fire earlier. The A10 Great Cambridge Road in Tottenham is partially blocked southbound at the roundway. That's due to an accident. There are delays in Park Royal with two lanes closed on the A406 North Circular northbound due to emergency repairs at Hanger Lane. Things are slow on the M4 Heathrow Spur Road southbound before the tunnels into the terminals, and on the trains, there's no service on Gatwick Express between Gatwick Airport and Brighton due to signal problems, and there are severe delays on the Jubilee line.
This is LBC.
Tesco Finest Sugar Bell Tomatoes, the ultimate supporting act. Zinging up salads or elevating fresh linguine. Perfect for when you want to be vined and dined. It's why only the finest varieties are hand-picked when perfectly ripe, to ensure our Sugar Bell tomatoes are exceptionally sweet. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
LBC.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex, as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
The holiday park industry is in the spotlight after thousands of holiday park homeowners lost what they...
You've heard it in the news. Holiday park homeowners being hit with sudden site fee increases, fake resale promises, and dramatic losses in the value of their holiday homes. The Holiday Park Advice Centre could help you get compensation if you were missold. Contact the Holiday Park Advice Centre today. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
9:19 the time. Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. Alex asks the question that I think a lot of parents will ask themselves. So, Alex, good of you to ask it. Tom, be honest. Would you be disappointed if your children decide not to take the university route? All the people who talk about uni not being the only option generally talk about other people's children. Alex, that is a very fair, legitimate question. And the answer is no. I wouldn't be disappointed. It depends on the options available. For example, and this is going to sound unbelievably snobbish, but you know me. if your option is to go to a very poorly rated university to do a degree that is not really necessary for a particular job that you want to go into, but something that you maybe enjoyed a bit at school or you felt quite interested in, then fine. But if there is a degree apprenticeship in something that you're quite excited by, financial services, I don't know. There's a degree apprenticeship in financial services in which you can go to, again, I don't know, JP Morgan and do some work experience there and get to meet people and get set up. And I'd much rather they did that. There's a chance to get your foot in the door at somewhere impressive and august and exciting and go and learn about it and you go and make friends and colleagues and get your feet under the desk and all that. That is going to be way, way more, I think, vastly more beneficial than going to, again, it sounds snobby, a very low-ranked university to do a not particularly exciting or interesting degree. I know, that sounds terrible. But hey, we take the line that Alan Partridge takes. You don't mess around when it comes to your own kids. John's in Weybridge. John.
Morning, Tom. So just ringing in, for myself, I'm a chief engineer. I look after multiple hospitals in the south of England. Originally, I started off, I came up the non-university route and got trade qualifications. And then later on in life, after about 15 years in the industry, I went and got a degree and then went and got my master's. And then went and got my formal accreditations through the engineering institutes. I have about 150 staff that I employ across the areas that I look after. And there's really just two things that we're starting to struggle with or have been struggling with for a while now. One is when we go out for roles, we're increasingly finding engineers who come through the university with master's and PhD to doctor level qualifications applying for roles that are trade-based because they can't find roles within the professional services sector. And we just can't employ them because we effectively would have to send them back to trade training because they have no practical skills.
I see.
An example of that is I had one university ask me to take a master's student under my belt to help this student with their master's. They'd been studying steam and boilers in terms of steam generation for the whole of their master's course. And we walked into a boiler house.
Literally hot air.
But we walked into a boiler house and the student had never seen a boiler. So stood in front of the boilers and went, "What are those?" And I mean, been studying them for years and stood in front of one and didn't know what it was. The other point I was going to make for
it is very... John, yeah, what did you do in that situation, that poor person?
I felt very, very sorry for them because I could having gone through university to later life, the university education I got was fantastic in terms of theory. It helped me to really understand the science behind everything, and I think it really propelled me. But it propelled me at a point in life where I had the practical understanding behind me for that theoretical understanding to be of value.
So what are we saying here, John? We're saying perhaps that the method of learning via traditional university routes of all theory is not really very useful in the vast majority of the world of work.
Correct. Exactly.
So
that.
Universities are still going to play a role in a degree apprenticeship because that's the method through which you're going to get the learning bit, but it has to come with a lot more practical, real-life, real-world experience.
Exactly that. And that, I think, is what industry is really looking for. I mean, and that's across the board. I do consultancy work for some of the big name organizations in the country in terms of engineering. And all of them are struggling. You know, 5-6 years ago, they were paying engineers sort of a £30,000 starting salary. They're now at £60,000, £70,000 salaries.
It's going to make it then very difficult for things like arts subjects. I mean, I did theology. I mean, what the hell was that about? I'm not going to go into the church anytime soon. So if you do a sort of desk-based degree that doesn't sort of naturally lead on to anything in particular, that's going to be seen as much, much less valuable and probably less popular as a result and may well die off. John, thank you. Anne's in Awards Heath. Anne.
Hello. I don't know if I've been given time to get my point across, but the point is I've spent my life's work trying to give people steps up because I know what being deprived and poverty is like, and all children have a gift. So I do agree in some senses with Andy Burnham, because we are wasting a lot of talent of, and gifts of children in the UK. We haven't copied the German system. A few years ago, my children all left school round here with nothing and no hope. It ended up that my youngest was allowed to take psychometric testing. East Sussex introduced it. And he was actually quite broken. And they said, you can't get a job. You've got to read science. Now, for him, we did manage the struggle, and he is a scientist. He's a doctor.
Amazing.
Not all children will be scientists and doctors, but all children have a gift. And we need to give them the opportunity to find out what they can do. I think Australia did it, or does it. And not waste them, not give them a frustrated life of never actually being able to use what they've got. And very quickly, Tom, ADHD. ADHD. I set up two groups under fives. They would come in, some punching, biting, hyperactivity. Do you know what? When I worked with the parents, eliminated the children's fear, that behaviour changed. Fear is the root of ADHD, whether you're in the workplace, wherever.
Don't know
and
about
we
that.
Label people and we brand them for life.
Well, can I ask you something? Because we're going to talk about this in a minute, Anne. You've led me nicely onto it. For some people, of course, it will be the case that ADHD is disabling. Would you view having ADHD for anybody as a disability?
Oh, I just don't want to label... No. And I have a disability, and I've blasted well not wanted people to see me as weak, and, you know, because I have. No, we don't need to disable people. And if they have got a condition... You know, I was raised in care, and I had no hope. I did have hope, because I went to church. But I didn't see that I was a victim.
No. And I really appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed. We'll get into the ADHD story in a few moments. Very interesting. Andrew's in Paddington. Andrew. He's getting ready. Andrew?
Yes, I'm with you.
Thank you.
Very good programme.
I'm trying.
And what I wanted to speak about is the guilds or the livery companies.
Ah.
There are 100... Absolutely. There are 112 livery companies. Their trade associations that historically regulated crafts and trade.
The grocers, providing, the vintners, all that business.
Well, I mean, to list a few for you, you mentioned vintners. Let's mention just a selection. Goldsmiths.
Sure. Yep.
Carpenters,
yep.
Bakers.
Yep.
I'm with the Worshipful Company of Gardeners.
Very good.
Ironmongers, etc. The livery companies provide both information about the trades.
Andrew, could you? I'm sorry. Please forgive me. What's your point?
My point is that Andy Burnham is absolutely right. And for young people who want to pursue careers in the trades, they should approach the livery companies.
Because they'll have the best routes. And the money, some cases. Some of these places are minted.
Well, some are, some aren't. But the livery companies generally, both with the schooling system, because you know that, for example, Mercers, Skinners, Haberdashers have schools linked to them.
They do, and they actually, in some cases, fund, I think it depends on a variety of different criteria, but they fund kids through various schools, some of those companies. Andrew, thank you very much indeed. To many, says Andy Burnham, to many of them, school leavers, it feels like they are forgotten by an education system which doesn't give them the same priority to technical education nor open up the same clear paths beyond school. You finished school, you did your A-levels, you came out to what? Nothing? sort of hand to mouth to try and build a career. There wasn't the help available, but your mate who decided they were going to university, it was sort of all laid out before you. There's a UCAS for, there's a UCAS officer, there's the school helping them get into the university, but nothing else for you. 0345 6060 973 is the number. Coming up,
it's really, really well known that employment is affected. Struggling with hyperactivity in an office environment, that's difficult.
A female executive earning £220,000 a year was sacked for allegedly becoming so drunk at a work event that she slept in a sauna. She was nevertheless discriminated against due to her ADHD, an employment tribunal has ruled. We'll get into the details after the 9:30, or the sauna, after the 9:31 news headlines. Thomas Watts.
Israel's defence minister has threatened to destroy Gaza City unless Hamas accepts Israel's terms to end their war. Troops are preparing for an expanded offensive in the area, with 60,000 reservists called up. Police are making preparations for potential protests near hotels used to house asylum seekers. It follows the High Court's decision to grant a temporary injunction to remove migrants from a hotel in Epping. Thousands of people living abroad will have their child benefits stopped as part of a new crackdown. It follows a trial in which 15 investigators stopped 2,600 people receiving the benefit after moving out of the UK. LBC weather, another dry day with sunny spells for many, cooler and cloudier in central areas, a high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
Being an adult sucks. Adults, they have to work all day.
When adults get mail, it's always bills, and bills suck.
Sure, but we've got a driver's license.
Take advantage of Blue Week to enjoy 1.9% APR representative with up to £1,000 deposit contribution on certain models in the new Alpine A290 range at your Alpine store. PCP Mobilise Financial Services. Order between the 8th and the 25th of August. T&Cs apply.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Text 84850.
Here's Archie on WhatsApp. Tom, when I mentioned the word apprenticeship in high school, I was shunned. Basically, in sixth form, we were just told it was university or nothing. I left sixth form, went and did a three-year apprenticeship in electronic engineering, and now earn more than my mate who went to uni to do engineering, says Archie. So you're not... I think Andy Burner's point is that there's no kind of formal process for you if you don't decide to go down the traditional university route. Mind you, there's so much about the education system that I genuinely think is ripe for reform. One of them being, and maybe a little controversial, but why not step on a landmine at 9:34? The school day itself strikes me as needing to be ripped up. There is a biological reason why your teenager won't get out of bed at 7 o'clock in the morning. It's because they're just not ready for it. Their body's changing. They're not ready for it. I think there's got to be a way of schools leaning into that a bit and saying, do you know what? We start at 9:30 for the teenager. Well, maybe we finish at 6. But just we accommodate the fact that your biology is king and means that you're barely functioning, if you're honest, you're barely functioning age 15 at school until at least 10:30 or 11. Time first break comes around, you've finally woken up. That it feels a little Victorian, some of the school day, doesn't it? 0345 6060 973. Come back to that in just a few moments. Next.
Girls present very differently. They can daydream, they find it difficult to follow instructions, they can be anxious. And these young girls grow up to mask their symptoms.
A female executive who was sacked for allegedly becoming so drunk at a work event that she's... I don't know why I find it so funny. that she slept in a sauna was discriminated against due to her ADHD, according to an employment tribunal. This is the case of Shannon Burns, who was vice president of engineering at a German firm, dismissed for her behaviour at an off-site event in Austria. She was told her behaviour had eroded trust and confidence. She should have led by example as a senior employee of the software development company. She was headhunted to the role, but was said to have been intoxicated, even though she argued that her male colleagues were far more intoxicated than her. She was diagnosed with ADHD in 2015, claimed she was discriminated against by her former company for both her sex and disability. The employment judge dismissed her claim of sexual discrimination, but backed the former executive's disability claim, saying Burns's ADHD had contributed to a great deal of forgetfulness, including losing the keys to her hotel room on the night of the off-site function. Daniel Barn is the presenter of LBC's Legal Hour, Saturdays from 9 p.m, and employment barrister Outer Temple Chambers. Great to speak to you, Daniel. Thank you for coming on. Your view of this case?
Morning, Tom. Well, there's a lot to unpack here,
yes,
because this is a woman on a £300,000 salary, including her bonus.
Ah.
Huge amount of money, really senior, and she was doing really badly at her job after she'd been working for this company for 6 months. And there are a number of things that caused problems and led to her dismissal. For example, she missed a lot of deadlines. For example, she kept promising to do things and didn't do them. She wasn't very good with her staff. And one night, against a don't get drunk at this office event party, she went and got drunk, lost her keys, fell asleep in the sauna because her roommate didn't wake up when she banged on the hotel room door. And all these things fed into the decision to dismiss her. And what the tribunal said is, this is a woman who has a disability. She had ADHD, she had dyslexia, she ticked the box for a disability, and that triggers a duty on employers to make adjustments, to make reasonable adjustments. And what this employer didn't do is, after it had been put on notice that she had ADHD, because she asked for an ADHD coach to help her, after it had been put on notice, it took no steps to get her a PA to help with screen readers for her dyslexia and so on. And the judge said, and I understand this, that this is a woman who had real mental health problems. She had thrived in high executive positions in previous jobs with her ADHD when adjustments were made. And this company was concerned with the bottom line only, which is fair enough in a way, but it just didn't do what it should have done, didn't give her some help. And that's why they lost the case. The tribunal said that if the company had looked at getting her a coach, looked at making adjustments, maybe, just maybe, she would have coped better as she'd done in previous jobs and wouldn't have been dismissed, or at least wouldn't have been dismissed at that point.
Yeah.
That's the crucial thing.
Right.
So there's going to be another hearing to work out, if they'd made adjustments, would she have kept her job? Would she have been dismissed anyway? If she'd have kept her job, how long would she have stayed in the job for? And so how much money should she get?
Gosh, it's very difficult working all these things out. When is an employer told, or what qualifies someone who has diagnosed ADHD, what qualifies them as having a disability?
Right, this is really tough, and one judge might say someone's disabled and another judge might say precisely the opposite. There's so many grey areas here. But the legal test is, they've got to have a condition, physical or mental, that's more than trivial. So it's a relatively low bar.
Is that the
language? That's the legal test.
More than trivial?
Well, I'll give you the exact language. It has to have a substantial adverse effect on someone's ability to carry out normal day-to-day activities. But the courts have interpreted the word substantial as meaning more than trivial.
Okay.
So if their condition has a more than trivial effect on their ability to do their job, to read, to walk, whatever it might be, and it's long term, it's got to be long term, which means it's expected to last for more than 12 months. This was a lifetime condition for Miss Burns. Then it ticks the box as being disabled, and that triggers the duty to make adjustments. Now, there may not be adjustments that can sensibly be made. If someone's an abysmal performer, adjustments might not achieve anything. But the company's problem here, GitHub's problem here, is that it just didn't look at adjustments. And in previous jobs, Miss Burns could point to adjustments that had been made, like getting her an executive coach, and saying, these worked really well for me. They saved the day.
Fascinating case. And I suspect lots more cases will be coming before employment tribunals, given the number of people diagnosed with ADHD. Daniel, thank you for walking us through the details through it so expertly. Daniel Barnett is presenter of LBC's Legal Hour, Saturdays from 9 p.m. Highly recommended, by the way. Employment barrister too at Outer Temple Chambers. It's tricky, this. I think this is quite tricky. There are a lot of people with diagnosed ADHD. Some will be more severe than others, of course. It's a sliding scale. It's a, you know, spectrum, isn't it? But I have the word words of Sue Perkins rattling around in my head, who is ADHD. She's got ADHD. She describes it as an explanation, not an excuse. So the reason why she forgets her keys or doesn't get out of the house on time is because of the ADHD, but the ADHD isn't an excuse for not doing that. There's ways in which you can find to cope with it and to manage it. And so in that sense, to what extent can it be said to be a disability? 03456060973. Richard's in Newham. Richard.
Hi, yeah. I'm a union rep in the tech sector. Ah. And we see a lot. So I thought it was a really great summary coming from Daniel. It said a lot of the things that I was worried wouldn't be said. But I think the thing to talk about is that, you know, she was not dismissed. Sorry, she didn't win the case because she was performing well. She won the case because she should have had reasonable adjustments and didn't get them, right? And he said that there was no attempts made, but from my understanding, for really the judgment, right, they said, oh, yeah, go find yourself an ADHD and dyslexia coach, okay, which is really, really difficult, right? It's a proactive duty they have to make reasonable adjustments, proactive. You can't say, oh, well, no, go just ask us for what you want. That's what they didn't do. HR was one person, right, completely overwhelmed, right? She should have had a PA. She had one in all her previous jobs, and she thrived at her previous jobs, right? Okay. But at her previous jobs, she got the PA, she got the coach, she got screen reading software, right? This company, they said they had a highly written and async culture. This woman, her reading speed is 1/8 of the average, right? Okay. Now, with screen reading software, that could have been mitigated. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't. And what I will say is because union prevalence in the tech sector is so incredibly low, it falls to the employee to make the claim, right? And it's harder for an employee with ADHD or dyslexia to make the claim. And as such, you know, HR departments deliberately or accidentally, right, they're used to sort of riffing it, making it up as they go along.
But Richard, I guess,
a bit of a surprise.
Who judges whether or not someone's ADHD qualifies them to require more support, or that it has a substantial adverse effect? Who ultimately makes that decision?
Well, you hope to have a sensible conversation between the employee and the employer, and for nobody else needs to get involved. But I mean, if you read the judgment, ultimately the employment tribunal goes through all of those details, and they go through how disabled she is and what the impact is on her.
So the employment tribunal came to its conclusion. That's absolutely fine. It's just, it's going to be very, very difficult if an employee says to a boss, listen, the reason why I can't remember what time it is and I've left my keys everywhere and I'm really all over the place is because of my ADHD. It's having a substantial adverse effect. Therefore, I fall under the definition of disabled and require additional support. And the boss says, or you set a couple of alarm reminders, or do you know what I mean? You can find a way of, it's an explanation, not an excuse, to come back to Sue Perkins's line.
Well, I mean, an explanation, not an excuse for who? The employer or the employee? I mean, the point at which you start having a capability discussion is after you've made the reasonable adjustments, okay? So you want to go through those reasonable adjustments as expeditiously as you possibly can, okay? And then once all the adjustments that can reasonably made have been made, if the employee is still not performing, then you have that conversation. But the problem is that, you know, these people just didn't play by the rules. I mean,
Is ADHD a disability? Is ADHD a disability in all cases?
It's not for me to judge whether it is or isn't a disability. You hope to have a sensible discussion with the employee, with the employer and the employee, and if they can't reach a resolution, then you escalate it.
All right. Richard, thank you very much indeed. I think Richard looking for a job as a union representative in the tech sector. He says very underrepresented. Who among us can honestly say they've never got hammered at a work event and ended up sleeping in the sauna? I mean, that is just that. What a night, what a Wednesday night that was. But this issue of ADHD in particular in this case and disability, there are people who have ADHD and are disabled. As a result of that, it has a substantial adverse effect on them, and therefore they need support and help. But I don't know that we can say in all cases ADHD means that person is disabled. Can we? Or is that what we're saying? 03456060973. Come back to that. And your calls on the utility of going to university. After the 9:45 news headlines, Thomas Watts.
The Israeli Defense Minister has threatened to destroy Gaza City unless Hamas agrees to disarm and release all remaining hostages. Police are making preparations for potential protests near hotels used to house asylum seekers, and the government's announced an expanded effort to stop people receiving child benefit after moving abroad. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many, cooler and cloudier in central areas, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. In Warden, the A23 Purley Way is blocked southbound due to an accident from Croydon Road to Stafford Road. In New Cross, Hatch and Park Road is closed eastbound from the A2 New Cross Road to Camplin Street because of a building fire earlier. The A10 Great Cambridge Road in Tottenham is partially blocked southbound at the roundway. That's due to an accident. There are delays in Finchley with the A406 North Circular partially blocked westbound, again due to an accident at Henley's Corner. Things are slow on the M4 Heathrow Spur Road southbound before the tunnels into the terminals, and on the trains there's no service on Gatwick Express between Gatwick Airport and Brighton. That's due to signal problems, and there are severe delays on the Jubilee line.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Lewis Goodall.
A quarter of Labour members say they would back a Corbyn-led breakaway party. Keir Starmer's problems about to get even worse.
Lewis Goodall on LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was a dream that became a nightmare. High-pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many customers feeling misled, angry, and trapped. But the Holiday Park Advice Centre can help. Contact us today and we'll help claim back any money you're owed on your holiday home. Text ASSIST to 78900 to get started.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Ta. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
Zero, nada, zilch. When Vauxhall say 0%, they mean 0%. 0% APR is available now across the Vauxhall car range, including the all-new Frontera Electric. With a minimum 20% deposit and up to 4 years on offer, what's not to like? And now, for a limited time, get an extra £500 towards your new Vauxhall. Search Vauxhall to find out more. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, £500 contribution on new car orders between 23rd of August to 8th of September 2025. 18 plus, subject to status and availability, T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
You've arrived, your dream holiday. You got there for less thanks to comparing flight prices on Kayak. An idyllic local restaurant nestled in the cliffs. A peaceful pool with your own private sunbed. This is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare flight prices from hundreds of travel sites and bag a great deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
When they're away at uni and the show you all love is on telly. When you're miles apart but still laughing at the same joke. When the emojis come thick and fast.
Triple smiley face and a heart.
I knew they'd love that.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. Make sure your child has a TV license when they go to uni, so they're covered to watch all TV channels and you can still enjoy all those TV moments in the family group chat.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
9:49 the time. John is in Selby, beautiful part of North Yorkshire. Hiya, John.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm very well, sir.
You can probably tell from my accent in a minute that I'm only recently at these parts, but yes, it's a lovely part of the world. Coming back to your conversation point this morning about Andy Burnham,
yes.
Wholeheartedly agree, sir. I'm getting on in years now, but fundamentally, from an education point of view, I think the diet, the curriculum has got a lot to answer for as far as apprenticeships, etc. concerns. I mean, I did 3 technical engineering, drawing, metalwork and woodwork when I was at school. And fundamentally, those sorts of curriculum is not there anymore for up-and-coming students. I didn't go to university. Well, I went to university eventually, but my father suggested I did an apprenticeship, which I did, and then someone paid me to go to university.
Oh.
So very fortunate.
Wow.
One of the things, as far as that's concerned, though, and it was interesting, one of your callers saying about boiler maintenance, it's amazing when you do interview graduates that I worked in the electricity, ended up working for utilities in the electricity sector. Fundamentally, the graduates who are coming in, when you ask them at an interview how the power comes into your house, having done electrical engineering at university, and they don't know, it just causes you to scratch your head a little bit.
Right.
So, fundamentally, the point I want to get on wholeheartedly, I think we need to do it. We need to do it sooner rather than later, as far as educating children to go into more practical studies for those who want to do that. And wholeheartedly agree that going to university is not the answer for everybody.
No, and it does feel as if, I think, certainly from the parents' point of view, asked the question earlier about would you feel quite disappointed if your children didn't end up going to university. For a lot of parents, the answer would be yes, even if the university wasn't great, the course wasn't great, the teaching wasn't great. It's just getting to university seems for a lot of people to be the be-all and end-all. And I think that rules out potentially quite a lot of options that may well end up doing a better job of getting your child to where they want to be in a few years' time, which is with a good job, being paid good money, good prospects, good opportunities, well-educated. That's what you all want. The route there doesn't, you know, it can change. It can be different. John, thank you very much indeed. Mind how you go. Kimberly's at the other end of the country in Tunbridge Wells. Royal Tunbridge Wells.
Hi.
Kimberly, hi.
Hi there. Just to comment on your guest that rang up about from the union with this lady who was,
yes,
won the tribunal.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah, I'm an employer. I'm a few people in a small salon in Tunbridge Wells. And hairdressing is notorious for having young people with ADHD.
Is it?
And yeah, it is, because they tend to be not that academic and they tend to be quite high functioning, you know, so in my experience anyway, it's quite common. But I just wanted to say, at what point do we put the responsibility back to the employee? Because surely when that lady went for a job for £300,000 salary, she must have said to the guy at some point in that interview, I need a PA. I can't function without a PA. And why hasn't she put her hand up, you know, if she's been asking for things, but at the point of her employment, surely that would have been a deal breaker.
Well, as far as the employment tribunal goes, the employer should have made reasonable adjustments in order to help their colleague work effectively. She had those reasonable adjustments in a previous job, we learn, and she was able to do that very well.
But it shouldn't have been an adjustment even before then. When she went for the interview, what are your skills? What do you do? What are you good at? What are you not good at? Yeah, I'm a high fly, whatever I'm going to be, but I do need a PA. I can't do this on my own. This is what I've had a PA in my jobs historically. I need this to be able to read a computer more effectively. At the starting point, I think both have to look at each other at that point when they first met.
Is there a world in which the employer can say, you might have ADHD, I'm sure here's your thing that says you've got ADHD, we actually don't think you need a reasonable, we don't think you need a PA or a reasonable budget. We think you'll be fine. We think you'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about it, but I do think it's used sometimes, like Sue Perkins said, as an excuse rather than a reason. It's such a wide case, isn't it, ADHD? It's 0 to 100, and everybody kind of pull it out whenever it suits. I have had that in my business.
The language around this is, I find, quite confusing sometimes. It's a neurodiversity thing. So your brain is atypical. Understood, got that. Is that different from or connected to a disability where you are
disabled? It's just different.
I
think it's just different. They wouldn't want to be classed as disabled, I'm sure. It's just a different way of learning. Like my son has he's dyslexic, and we're hammering it into him all the time. It's fine. It's just different. You learn a different way to people. I would hate to think it was going to be labelled as a disability or needs extra help or because of the stigma with it. I think there is. In my time, I'm 55. I know it's a lot more acceptable now. It's more of the norm now. But when I was younger, you know, that's not what you wanted to be. That was something that you were trying to... It's almost like a monkey on your back, you know? Maybe I'm wrong for saying that.
Well, it's harder, isn't it? I think life is just harder. There are more barriers to overcome. There are more challenges in front of you if you have a disability, no doubt. But the definition of what classifies as a disability has been changing. Kimberly, thank you very much indeed for the call. I get this from John. ADHD, Tom, is always a disability. It completely changes the neurology at play in the individual's brain. Even those who don't think it's affected them usually have habits or traits they develop that are themselves coping mechanisms that other neurotypical people often don't need. The solution isn't to ostracize the neurodiverse community. It's to learn to be more intersectional. Wow. With more choices. Meetings, says John, always have an agenda distributed in advance. Consider if sitting down is essential. Can the room have different types of chairs in it for those with sensory needs? Can there be regular short breaks for discomfort? Explain graphs and images used, etc., says John. I don't know. The people in my life I know with ADHD, I know many, many people in my life, young and old, with ADHD, are all of them disabled? No. Susan Thurrock. Sue.
Hello, Tom. Yeah. Everybody with ADHD has a disability to varying degrees. I'm dyslexic, and I agree somewhat with what your previous caller said about, you know, back in the day, it was like a real stigma to it. But that's why we've got the Disability Act.
So
I manage my dyslexia, and 99.9% of the time, I manage well with it. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't say to somebody that's lost a leg that because they get a prosthetic that helps them walk again, that they're not disabled.
No.
Exactly. So because somebody can manage...
But is dyslexia as disabling as losing a leg?
It can be.
Really?
It's not for me.
Is all dyslexia as disabled? If you lose a leg, you lose a leg.
That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. You know, the fact that I can actually manage, like somebody could manage with a prosthetic, I still have that disability. And, you know, and I can only sort of manage everything.
It depends on the extent of your dyslexia. I agree with you that in some cases people's dyslexia is so bad that they're never going to be able to read, which is disabling. I would agree with that. But not everybody's dyslexia is as bad as that. So I'm not sure you are therefore disabled.
It's not just reading. You see, this is where everybody gets dyslexia wrong. It's like, you know, I mean, I can read perfectly well.
Brilliant.
But sometimes... if I'm using a screen for too long, the words start swimming around the page.
Yes,
and
sure.
I get nausea.
But see, losing a leg, with respect.
No, but I mean, you're sort of trying to sort of say that, you know...
I'm saying there are varying degrees of effect of being dyslexic, some of which is incredibly disabling, some of which is and is a challenge to overcome. It's not the same as losing your leg.
It's not exactly the same, no. But what I'm saying is that just because some people manage a condition better than others doesn't mean to say that they don't have a disability.
All right. So I've got to leave it there. Very interesting conversation. I suspect we could carry on this, but thank you very much indeed. Thank you to you for your calls throughout the day and the week. I'll be back with you next Monday from 4 p.m. I'm going abroad. Thank you for your time this week. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on both Global Player and the brand new LBC app. You can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. You get it for free from the App Store now. At 1 on LBC, it's Sheila Fogarty. Next, Lewis Goodall.
Thanks so much, Tom. 1 in 4 Labour members could back Jeremy Corbyn's new breakaway party at the next general election. That's according to new polling from Servation. 28% of those surveyed say they were considering supporting the former Labour leader's new left-wing pro-Gaza movement, which is set to be launched formally in the autumn. Corbyn, of course, announced that venture along with fellow MP Zara Sultana in July. The pair want to act as a sort of reverse UKIP for the Labour Party, dragging it to the left. 59% said Starmer should pursue more left-wing policies. This follows polling earlier this week showing significant public support for a new left-wing party. Is this the great gaping space in British politics? And with barely a party touching 30%, are we in an era where the old party system is dead and buried?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play. today, LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Israel's defence minister has issued a fresh warning to Hamas to disarm and release all remaining hostages. Israel Katz has threatened to, in his words, open the gates of hell on Gaza City, where troops are preparing for an expanded offensive. The wide-scale operation could start within days. The Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, says he has ordered new talks on ending the war.
I greatly appreciate the presence of the reserve soldiers and, of course, the regular army for this vital goal. At the same time, I have instructed to begin immediate negotiations on the release of all our hostages and an end to the war on terms acceptable to Israel.
In the last few minutes, a UN-backed body has declared a famine in Gaza City. Protests outside hotels used to house asylum seekers are expected over the weekend. It follows a successful legal challenge by a council in Essex to stop migrants being accommodated in Epping. LBC's Fraser Knight has more.
As councils across the country now look at their own legal action to try and close migrant hotels, police are preparing for dozens more protests and counter-demonstrations outside several of them this weekend. Figures showed the number of asylum seekers in hotels rose by 8% in Labour's first year in government, and there's a record number of people seeking refuge here. But the Home Secretary insists they're working to end hotel use by 2029.
More than 200 investigators are to crack down on people claiming child benefit after moving abroad. Ministers say it could see tens of thousands of people lose their payments, saving £350 million over 5 years. People who leave the UK for more than 8 weeks are no longer eligible. A large fire at a suspected cannabis factory in London has been brought under control. Around 80 firefighters were called to a mid-terraced property in Walthamstow just after 2 o'clock this morning. Illicit drugs factories often use botched wiring to steal electricity. An MSP has resigned from the Scottish Conservatives to sit as an independent at Holyrood. Jeremy Balfour has accused the Tories of falling into a trap of reactionary politics. The party has been contacted for comment. And England are preparing for the opening match of the Women's Rugby World Cup as favourites. The hosts are on a 27-game winning streak going into this evening's tie against the USA in Sunderland. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 92.89. That's down 19. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather dry and sunny for most places with cooler and cloudier spells in central areas. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
The Cupra Drive event is back. Get £3,000 off the all-electric Cupra Tavascan, our bold new SUV coupe. Just order and take delivery by 30th September. Follow your impulse. Search Cupra Drive event. T's and C's and exclusions apply. UK retail customers 18 plus. New stock vehicles only, subject to availability. Saving including VAT applied to on-the-road price.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Very good morning to you. The time is 10.03. You're listening to Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien all this week on LBC for final day this week, I should say. And what a pleasure it has been. Lots to get through today on the show. Lots of politics to get through. We're going to be talking about the potential of this new breakaway left-wing party in this hour. And then lots of other stuff to come after that as well. A bit of breaking news first, though, which is that famine has now been confirmed in Gaza City for the first time. That's according to UN-backed report. The famine in Gaza is entirely man-made. This is from a report from the IPC saying that it can be halted and reversed. The IPC, which is a global initiative by UN agencies, aid groups and governments, the primary mechanism the international community uses to conclude whether a famine is happening. They've said the time for debate and hesitation has passed. Starvation is present and is rapidly spreading. It's a 59-page report published a few minutes ago, said there should be no doubt in anyone's mind that an immediate at-scale response is needed. Any further delay, they say, even by days, will result in a totally unacceptable escalation of famine-related mortality. So again, that breaking news, that famine being confirmed in Gaza City for the first time. That is according to a UN-backed body responsible for monitoring food security. This is, of course, exactly at the moment that the Israeli government and the IDF are sending troops, battering the city, trying to capture it in full for the first time. So if you have any thoughts on that, what it, our government should do in terms of its response, should this actually trigger a different response than we've seen before? Does it mean sanctions against the state of Israel? Does it mean either personal or against the country itself? Should we be stopping all weapons exports to Israel? We don't export many, but there are still some licenses that do go there. Do we need, from Keir Starmer, as a result of this, famine being confirmed in Gaza City for the first time by the UN, a gear change, a step change, a transformation in the way our government is dealing with Israel? 0345 6060 973. We'll put that to our guest, Zach Polansky, the Deputy Leader of the Green Party of England and Wales, in a moment. What we were going to talk about, which we should still talk about, though, before that news broke, because it is related, at least in the narrower context of British politics, is this prospect of a breakaway party. This one in four Labour members now potentially backing, this is according to polling from Servation, backing Jeremy Corbyn's party at the next general election. 28% of those surveyed said they were considering supporting the former Labour leader's new left-wing pro-Gaza movement, set to be launched formally in the autumn. Of course, he announced it somewhat chaotically with his fellow MP and former Labour MP Zara Sultana in July, aiming to win over disaffected voters. Also polling this week showing that Labour could, this new party could do well with the general electorate at large. 59% of Labour members saying Starmer should pursue more left-wing policies, plus a change perhaps for Labour members, but nonetheless, 28% of members said they would potentially back Corbyn's movement, and a majority, 51%, thought a new party could split the left and boost the chances of a Conservative or Reform-led government. Corbyn's welcomed the findings for his part of the poll. He said, for too long, people have been denied a real political choice. Not anymore. 700,000 people have already signed up to build a real alternative to inequality, poverty and war, one based on public ownership, wealth redistribution, housing, justice and peace. This is just the beginning. We're an unstoppable movement and never going away. A Labour source, for their part, defending their party's performance and saying Starmer was focused on creating a fairer Britain for working people. Your thoughts on whether you would back a new breakaway left-wing party, and indeed whether that is the big gaping space at the heart of British politics right now. So much of British intellectual public life at the moment is conducted on the right, isn't it? And there's a sort of weird juxtaposition or a weird contradiction that's sitting at the heart of British politics right now, which is, on the face of it, we have never had a more left-wing parliament. The 2024 general election delivered the most progressive left-wing parliament in British political history, in the sense that there have never been fewer Conservative MPs, there have never been fewer MPs on the right, there have never been more MPs that you could loosely describe as being on the centre-left, the left, the progressive left, the progressive side of politics, whatever. And yet all of the intellectual running, pretty much from that day, has been not just on the right, but on the radical right. Think about the way our social media operates. Think about the way that our debates are framed on every issue, from housing to immigration to wealth to the economy, whatever it happens to be. For good or ill, it is being framed repeatedly through the prism, through the lens of the right, and often at that, the radical or even hard right. Why is that? Why is that? Well, one reason could be that there isn't really a large mainstream force articulating, pulling politics to the left in the way that there are repeated drags to the radical right, whether that's Elon Musk's Twitter, whether that's Nigel Farage and Reform, whether that's Kemi Badenoch's leadership of the Conservative Party. And as a result, the so-called Overton window of politics, the thing that we talk about, basically where the sort of parameters of politics sit, is dragged on issue after issue to the right, to the right, to the right. So it seems to me that there could well be, given Keir Starmer is, he may have many virtues, but he is not, and I think he would accept this himself, he's not someone terribly interested in the sort of ideas of politics. He's not that interested in the philosophy of politics. He's not that interested in articulating an ism. There's no such thing as Starmerism, and there never will be. He said that himself. But the net result of that, that's fine as far as it goes, but the